All right, welcome everyone. We are going to get this committee hearing started. This is actually the Division of Finance, State Senate Transportation and Public Safety. Today is Monday, April 13th, 2015. Members and audience, we have 17 bills in front of us. Most of them we actually don't have possession of because they are bonding bills, but we're giving them a hearing so that we can get on the public record what these projects propose to do, what our opportunities and aspirations and challenges are in our communities. We are at some point when we have quorum going to take action on a couple of bills to make sure that we can move them along to their next stop. We figured out after we had heard those bills last week that we needed to actually move them along. So with that, the first person who broke the threshold was Senator Fischbach, so we're going to jump down to Senate File 1519. Oh, I'm sorry. Senate File 219 and then 1519. Benton County, Highway 13, and then Sartell 50th Avenue. Welcome, Senator Fischbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate, even though it's for no real reason other than I showed up first, but thank you for letting us go first this afternoon. But I have with me, and we are taking up the Benton County Sauk Rapids bill first. And I think it's obvious it's an appropriation bill, and I think most easiest probably just to let the testifiers explain the need for the legislation.
Excellent. Thank you, Senator Fischbach. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and then proceed.
Hi, my name is Jake Bowerly. I'm a Benton County Commissioner. I'm chair of the board this year. And I have a cold today, so excuse my voice, but I felt it was important enough to come down anyway. It's a very important issue to Benton County and the area. Benton County and the city of Sauk Rapids together are trying to build a four-lane highway through Sauk Rapids that would connect Highway 10 to the city of St. Cloud and onto 94. The problem is we don't have the money. According to District 3 officials, a project of this sort should be funded mostly by federal funds, the tune of about 70 or 80%. But because Washington's in a stalemate in highway funding, we are underfunded by $2.8 million. And in your packet, in the back of my remarks, you'll see that APO has got this project at $2.8 million underfunded from the federal sources. So was the first phase of this project. We just had about $4.5 million to complete. This, too, should have had more federal funds. We just can't keep asking local taxpayers to pay for these regional projects because St. Paul and Washington can't get it done. Management gurus say that when you have a problem, first you have to analyze, is it a people problem or a system problem? When I look at this, I see it's a system problem. When I look at the highest tax counties in Minnesota, most of them are large counties with many miles of roads. And the problem is there's not enough local taxpayers to maintain these roads. The ratio of miles of roads to people is very high. These are good people, but they're fighting a battle they can't win. The St. Paul mandates our jail staff ratio. We just had to add three more staff people in our jail because of a staffing ratio to cells in our jail, even though the cells aren't full. We have legislation that makes us pay prevailing wage on our highway projects. Human Services has many mandates. The state auditor dictates that our audit should be done by the state auditor instead of a private firm, which raised our cost. Need I go on? When my brother Jerry was in the legislature years ago, he authored and they were able to pass a bill that helped out poor schools in the rural areas. I think the legislature do the same in rural counties. It's been a tale of two cities. The metro has gotten billions for transit while rural roads are literally crumbling. Benton County has 450 miles of roads and very little funds to pay for them. We already put a wheelage tax on, and now some suggest a local sales tax. Our businesses are already at a disadvantage to other counties and states. More local taxes won't help. I strongly believe that we should do something similar to did the schools and help out the poorest 10 counties in our state. Look through a corridor through Benton County, Mille Lacs County, Kennebec County, Carleton County, and Chisago County are six of the highest taxed counties, and they all have many miles of roads and not enough population to pay for them. The roads are everybody's roads, not just the local taxpayers. So we need to get some help for this regional road to connect our state highways together, and it should not have to all come out of our local funds. I think Ross is going to have a city of Sauk Rapids.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ross.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Ross Olson, and I'm the city administrator with the city of Sauk Rapids. This project is within our municipal limits. It's a county state aid highway, but it's within our municipal limits. It's an extremely important regional corridor to the city of Sauk Rapids, and that's why I'm here. We're here as a partner with the county, and we've been a partner from long before even design or preliminary design started. This is part of a larger corridor that runs right through the heart of our community, right through the heart of Benton County. And what's interesting about this corridor, although it's only about, it's a little under a mile in length, far more, when I say far more, our engineer that is working on the project as well as our city engineer have testified that more than 50%, quite a bit more, of those ADT's average daily travels that are on this corridor are not from Sauk Rapids. They are not from Benton County. They are driving to work, to play, to school, to the university, to the technical college, to the hospital. They're getting where they need to go using this regional corridor, as they should. This corridor has reached the end of its design life and its functional life. Right now, we're looking at about 15,000 ADTs. That's 15,000 cars going up and down what really is, if you drive down there, a city street. It's two lanes with a number of houses, about 40 houses on it, and because we're involved in the acquisition, sometimes those projects can be very controversial. I will tell you that those people that live in those houses were absolutely ecstatic to see us come to their kitchen table and start talking about buying their house because they can't live on the road. The road is far too congested. They can't back out into the road. This road really is a regional corridor, and it connects regional areas. With our partners, Stearns County, Benton County, we built a bridge, $58 million bridge that really looked at the rationale that we're arguing and we're testifying here today. Look at the congestion that's going through this corridor and improved a Mississippi Span River Bridge. Huge project, ultra successful. We worked with our partners, Benton County, and in the commissioner's comments, as well as in some of your brochures, we made a large investment on about another mile and a half stretch on the opposite side of Trunk Highway 10 to facilitate this traffic that's going through our community. We have a bottleneck here today, and that bottleneck is in drastic need of improvement. It's about $12 million, and the city has about $6 million into that. We have a large investment. There are lots of projects that come and ask you for money. They ask for planning dollars. They ask for some dollars that can get them through a phase in the project. That's not what we're asking. We're asking to complete a project. This is a project that is ready to go. This is a project that we are acquiring property right now. This you have the highest opportunity for success by considering this project, and we would really appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. All right, Senator Fischbach, I have Chris Byrd on the list of testifiers as well. Is that true? All right.
I guess so.
All right.
He's a really good guy.
Welcome, Mr. Byrd.
Yeah, good afternoon, committee, Mr. Chair. I am the county highway engineer for Benton County, so I don't have anything to add. I think Ross and Commissioner Barley summed it up pretty well. If there were some technical questions, I'd be happy to add those. But
all right.
I agree.
Very
it's a much-needed project. It's at the end of its design life.
So. Great. Thank you. Questions, members? All right, Senator Fischbach, anything further?
We would appreciate anything you guys. I don't know what the plan is exactly for your process, but anything you can do. You're passing your recommendations on to bonding. Is that correct? Is that the way I understand it?
Yes. I mean, we'll probably recommend everything because they're all worthy projects.
Oh.
Our goal is to
okay.
is to encourage that we have a very robust bonding bill, and of course we want to pass a really good transportation bill too, which would help with a lot of these issues.
Well, and
to,
Mr. Chair, we
to the commissioner's earlier points.
We appreciate the opportunity to come and explain the need for this project and for the Sartell project.
Great, thanks. And if I recall, we heard about this last year as well, right? This has been around
Mr. Chair,
for a while.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much. Good presentation. I learned a lot.
All right. Thank
you very much.
Thank you very much.
And you came in a full 2 minutes under time, so that's awesome. All right, we'll move on to your next bill, Senator.
Mr. Chair, does that get us on higher priority? Just checking.
It does,
I know
yeah.
all my. And Mr. Chair, now we have in front of us Senate file, and I don't think I have
1519.
Thank you very much,
Sartell.
Mr. Chair. And once again, I think it's just probably the best use of our time is if I hand it over to the testifier from the city.
Great. Welcome. Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anita Rasmussen. I'm the Assistant City Administrator and Community Development Director for the City of Sartell. The City of Sartell is requesting $4 million in state funding to complete the construction of a regional roadway known as 4th Avenue South and 23rd Street South in central Minnesota, Sartell. The request and the rationale for the request is that it's consistent with our local and regional roadway plans, including the West Metro Corridor Study, the Sartell Comprehensive Plan, and the St. Cloud Area Planning Organization's Transportation Plan. The West Metro Corridor Plan was approved to further facilitate a North Central Transportation Plan as an alternative to Highway 15 as an improvement. The plan is a regional effort that was formally approved by the impacted jurisdictions of the City of St. Cloud, Sartell, and Stearns County. This roadway further creates system linkage by creating an additional north-south corridor from Sartell into St. Cloud. This project will expand and provides better access and opportunity along with response time for fire, paramedics, police, and our public works. This proposed roadway will also create a more direct route and be beneficial towards the response time to the southerly portions of Sartell along with the northerly portions of the City of St. Cloud. These improvements within this roadway will create a decrease in emergency vehicle response time. As proposed, we were projecting that this roadway would be a two-lane with a center turn lane and would meet projected capacity and transportation needs, along with relieving some of the transportation congestion that's along Highway 15, along with County Road 1. This roadway would also provide expansive economic development and redevelopment opportunities. This roadway would expand into an area that would create an additional 200 acres that would be developable for industrial land, and would also have the ability to connect hundreds of properties along with thousands of employees and employers that will be able to connect within various areas within the City of Sartell, City of St. Cloud, and Central Minnesota. This also will help offset some of the tax base, which was removed from the City of Sartell as a result of the shuttering and explosion of the Sartell Verso paper mill in 2012 and the continuing demolition into 2015. Again, we hope that this project will be multimodal. It will have pedestrian facilities and will also serve as an alternate route for more efficient routes for the MTC, which is our local transportation commission. The total anticipated corridor project is $10.1 million. The city's share is projected to be $5.1 million, and we do have those funds allocated within our financial management plan. We have received some federal dollars for the right-of-way and construction costs, so we really do see this as a partnership with our federal funds, with our local funds, and with state funds to complete this very important regional project. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Rasmussen. Questions, members? You're so thorough. Anything to add, Senator Fischbach?
No, but thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We really appreciate, like I said, the opportunity to have our bills heard, and we'll be looking forward to them being passed on to bonding.
Yeah, I forgot about the big fire of the paper mill out there. That's a big issue. So.
Yes, it is.
All right. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Oh, a quorum is present. Remove the bills. So, members, if we could take action very quickly, and Senator Limmer, you can come forward. We need to move Senate File 111 and Senate File 529 to full finance. So, the chair will take Senate File 111 from the table. Senator Kent, would you like to make the motion?
So move.
As amended to finance. All in favor of Senator Kent's motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. The chair will take Senate File 529 from the table. Is that amended? So if you make the motion, it was amended as well.
And, yes, I would move that Senate File 529 as amended be moved to full finance.
Yes. All in favor of Senator Kent's motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you, members. Senator Limmer, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'd like to bring your attention to Senate File 1412. And there is a flyer that should be in your packets looking like this. It's the Brockton Interchange. I'll give you a little bit more background. What I want to do is give you a very quick macro perspective, and then I'm going to let Tim O'Neill, the mayor of Dayton, and his representatives give a little bit more detail. The Brockton Interchange fits halfway between Maple Grove and the Rogers intersection on Highway 94 in the northwest corner of our metropolitan area. That area, so you get a better perspective, there's 120,000 cars a day that travel on that freeway. And if you ever notice in the early morning hours when you watch traffic reports, it's always the one that's outlined in red because of the traffic congestion on that particular freeway. The Brockton Interchange is vitally important not only for the safety of motorists on that freeway, but also the economic opportunity that's happening at the very same time. I've been on this stretch of road many times when it's during rush hour, sometimes during other periods of time when it's highly congested. There's a cable divider that goes down the middle of the freeway in that area because at one time, an 11-year period of time, we experienced 29 deaths of cars going through the median and plowing into the car on oncoming lanes. Even to this day, when traffic is stalled, you can't get off the freeway for over 6 miles. That's unheard of in a metropolitan area. And if you ever had an emergency, oftentimes the only way to get into that little area of the freeway is by helicopter from North Memorial. So having said that, I want to introduce the mayor of Dayton, Mr. Tim O'Neill, and he'll give you a little bit better close-up perspective what it means to Dayton.
Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you.
Nice to see you again.
Nice seeing you. I'm hoping you had a good run the other day when we were having a little snow in the city of Dayton during your early morning run.
Actually, it was really nice. It was on Saturday morning, and I didn't go the full perimeter of Elm Creek, but we got a good run in, and it was there was some snow left over on the runs. That's right.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
A little bit that morning. So, yeah. Snow or sun, Dayton's a beautiful place to have a little run. But thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As it happens, I just came back from a regional council of mayors meeting in downtown Minneapolis, and there's one thing that was mentioned this afternoon that I thought was germane to this meeting. We had a gentleman who is a senior product president of property development for United Properties, and he mentioned in the last 3 years we've had over 7 million square feet of industrial buildings go up in the metro area. 50% of them have gone up on the corridor that we're actually talking about. So in the last 3 years, 50% of the industrial capacity in the Twin Cities areas is directly going to be addressed by the interchange that we're asking for. The interchange that we're referring to is the Brockton Interchange. We've been working on that in the city of Dayton for, depending on how serious we want to talk about it, sometime for the last 40 years, but in earnest in the last 4 or 5. We received $800,000 from the federal government, and with that money, we've figured out the exact location and the exact design that we're looking for in conjunction with our neighboring cities and all the pertinent jurisdictions. In fact, I'm not sure if Rogers managed to find their way in here, but they are coming to support us as well. But there they are. Fantastic. To my right is David Jellison, who is going to speak to the business aspect of this. He's one of the users that is building industrial capacity along this corridor. The actual interchange itself is part of a regional system that will eventually connect 94 to another river crossing at some point in time. It's also the last intersection that's required to have proper spacing between Wright County and the Maple Grove 610 interchange there. It's a producer of jobs. It's supported by our neighboring cities. And as
the senator alluded to, it's a major safety issue. The inability to access the freeway for 6 miles is a major impediment to safety issues, particularly as this is the gateway corridor to the northern Minnesota recreational area. And pretty much any time between Labor Day and Memorial Day, Thursday through Saturday, this becomes a parking lot at key time frames. So with those things being said, the cost of this is, for both phases, phase one and phase two, comes in around $36 million. 26 of that would be phase one, which is what we're looking for as soon as possible. Phase two would be additional lane miles as capacity is required. The process that we're looking at is to use a public-private partnership to create the funds to acquire right-of-way. We will use that right-of-way then to finish our TED application this late spring, early summer. We hope to have an answer to our TED funding question by September. And then with that TED funding, go out and look for the remaining gap funds that we would need to complete this project. With that, I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce David and have him speak to the actual jobs portion of this project.
Okay, thank you, Mayor McNeil. And Mr. Jellison, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. I am the Vice President and City Manager for Liberty Property Trust. We are a large industrial and office REIT headquartered outside of Philadelphia. I run the Minneapolis operation for us. We have approximately 5 million square feet of office and industrial buildings in the Twin City area. And we have been focused recently on the area that the mayor has been talking about here. We bought a site in Rogers. Back in the downturn of the economy in 2008, and purchased the land and built three new warehouse buildings out there, one of which Medline came into with their first facility in the Twin Cities with 300,000 square feet. The other two have been leased up with Graco taking one of the buildings for their expansion. We are working with the mayor and the city right now for an additional 5 to 9 buildings in what we call the French Lake Industrial Center. And as you know, out in this area, Federal Express is just completing a large facility across the street from where we're talking about off of Brockton. And we think this area will continue to grow, produce many more jobs. It's an area that many companies that want to distribute products, whether they're going northwest up into the Fargo-St. Cloud area and further, or going down into Rochester, have chosen this area as a good location. Number one, it has good employee availability here, the type of employees they want. They have it's a good area for schooling for children, and it's an area that is easily accessible. But as the mayor just said, it's getting more and more challenging for these people to bring their products in and out of this location. So as we build this project, we would love to see this interchange come in because it will save many trips for these people if they can use this instead of going down 81 and other areas. So access is a big part of industrial distribution, and this would make it a major location for people to continue to want to grow. And I think the 2 to 3 million square feet that will be added will create many good jobs for the area. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jellison. Do the folks from Rogers want to come forward?
No, I think they've said it well. Thank you.
All right. Do you want to just say your names for the record, and we'll record that you are here in support.
Steve Stamer, City Administrator in Rogers.
All right.
Healy, Mayor.
Great. Well, welcome. Appreciate your presence. Appreciate your support. Senator Limmer, anything further?
I think the representatives of this project have spoken well, Mr. Chair. Like I say, this is a highly trafficked area of the state of Minnesota. I think the mayor recognized the fact that it's kind of the jumping off route for anyone going outside of the metropolitan area and going north to the other areas of the state. It's true, it oftentimes becomes a parking lot. And one thing that we did not say is it probably would help that 101 intersection, that's the Rogers intersection, by dispersing and diluting a little bit of the traffic to the local regional area if this intersection was in. That way you didn't have to drive all the way up to Rogers and then turn around and come back. And the area is growing, and it is needed to have a few more access points on Highway 94.
All right. Thank you. Questions, members? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I know that we've all probably been stuck in traffic on the stretch, and Mayor McNeil told me about when he invited Representative Hornstein up and at a key time when he could experience the fullness of the congestion.
You really have to experience it to really believe it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. So we're going to jump to item number three. So we're all right. Well, we can still. So we're members Senate File 1, 2, 3, 4. I guess we don't have the correct version, but we'll invite the Senator Herr to the table, and we have Mayor Coleman here and Matt Kramer from the chamber, Mr. Cook as well. I see that there he is taking his seat. Welcome, Senator Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill, Senate File 1, 2, 3, 4, is most fitting number to request fund for the reconstruction of the St. Paul Kellogg Bridge or the 3rd Street Bridge. I appreciate your time and support of this project, including allow me to talk to the Transportation Committee during the Gateway Corridor tour. And I'd like to thank Senator Kent and other co-author of this bill. Senate File 1, 2, 3, 4 would appropriate $49 million of bonding money to reconstruction of the bridge. And the bridge, which is a lifeline to my constituents on the east side of St. Paul. It connects us to downtown, including government buildings, hospital, cultural amenities, and the new St. Paul Ballpark. Many of these investments are supported by our state's resources. It will also serve as connection point to the Gateway Corridor into the Union Depot. In short, this bridge is extremely important to the growth and access of a very diverse and economically disadvantaged community. I respectfully ask for your support to include this project in the Senate Capital Investment Bill, and I will turn it over to our mayor of St. Paul, Chris Coleman, and then there will be other testifiers follow, and I'll be open for questions as well. But maybe before that, sorry, Mr. Mayor here, I have an amendment, A1, that is coming around. On the bill itself, it said 40, and it's $49 million, actually, the dollar that we're requesting.
Okay. Two things. Do we have the current version of the bill? Yeah. So we need to await the current version of the bill, and I'll just have you describe the amendment for the public record, but we don't actually have possession of the bill because it's in the Capital Investments Committee and Senator Stump's committee. But this is where we hear the substance of the transportation-related items, and so we really can't take action on an amendment, but I'll have you describe it once we have the bill in front of us. But why don't we go ahead and hear from the mayor and the president of the chamber, and then we'll get back to that.
Yes, and great. I'm sure the mayor will describe why that dollar amount is increased.
All right, very good.
Yep.
Don't be so sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you so much. I'm Chris Coleman, mayor of the city of St. Paul, and I'm happy to be here in support of Senate File 1234. I want to thank Senator Herr for his support of the bill, as well as the chair and vice chair of the committee who understand the importance of this bridge to the East Metro region. This is not a project that has been long in discussion because it's a result of an emergency situation where the need to act has come upon us, and it is becoming very clear. As many of you know, the 3rd Street Bridge is a major thoroughfare between downtown St. Paul and the East Metro, and the east, particularly the east side of the city of St. Paul, including Metropolitan State University on one end, and the all the improvements and amenities in Lower Town in downtown St. Paul. It crosses Interstate 94, the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad yards, the Bruce Vento Nature Sanctuary, among other things. As it leaves Lower Town, it leaves the area that is directly adjacent to the new Saints Stadium, which will be opened up for Hamlin baseball. The Pipers played this weekend and will be open for the St. Paul Saints in just a little over a month. It is also directly connected to the Union Depot, which is bringing folks in via Amtrak and other modes of transportation, as well as a major destination for events and other activities. Last September, we placed lane restrictions on the bridge due to safety concerns related to the cantilevers from the bridge. This is a bridge that was probably obsolete the day that it was opened back in the early 80s, but the design's changed, and we didn't know that until more extensive work was done recently as we were trying to repair some of the deterioration of the bridge. We are focused primarily, first and foremost, on public safety, which is why we restricted the lanes. We have two lanes of traffic westbound and one lane of traffic on the eastbound side. What we have been told by multiple engineers, and I question many of them, was that any excessive weight over the cantilever could pose a threat to the structure of the bridge and would be very much endangering the people that were on the bridge. As you can imagine, the closing of lanes along a major thoroughfare is not an easy thing to do, and it's created many challenges for us as we try to get in and out of downtown St. Paul. Given the geography of St. Paul, with the river on one side, the bluffs on the surrounding sides, there are limited points of entry into the downtown area, and so everyone that is restricted becomes a significant challenge for us. The bridge serves about 10,000 vehicles a day, but what we're seeing in rush hour is major backups that are affecting the flow of commerce in and out of the area, as well as our residents that are currently living on either side of the bridge. The bridge is a key connection to the east side. It provides access to the downtown businesses, the city and state government services, hospitals, cultural institutions, and other amenities. It connects some of our most challenged communities with the many services provided by government, as well as many of the state-backed investments in downtown St. Paul. The bridge is a connection point for the future Gateway Corridor at Union Depot, and so therefore also becomes a critically important link to the East Metro region. We believe a full reconstruction of the bridge is the right option moving forward. It will address the safety concerns as well as prepare for future transportation needs and growth in the region. For example, full reconstruction will allow us to handle increased traffic flows, improve and enhance pedestrian bike capacity, and make the bridge transit ready for the Gateway Corridor. We believe the future demands of the area require a new bridge versus merely providing a bridge from the past. Trying to duct tape this thing together is really not the right solution. After public safety, the most pressing reason for reconstructing the bridge is because of who the bridge serves. As you look at our efforts to try to revitalize the east side neighborhood of St. Paul that is connected to the bridge, look at the culturally diverse populations that live on that on the east side, their need for a great connection to the services and transportation and jobs that are in our downtown area. If you look at their opportunity to get into some of our cultural amenities and our entertainment opportunities in downtown St. Paul, to cut this part of the city of St. Paul off from downtown creates a very, very significant inequality in our community that we'd also like to be able to address. We've made many significant improvements to the neighborhood on the east side and built up these communities. Investments like the Achievement Plus schools, as well as improvements to local recreation centers, have begun a transformation of this part of the city. State investment in the Metropolitan State University will also bring new vitality and life to the area, but people have to be able to access it. I am deeply concerned that leaving this bridge as it is sends the wrong message to the community and slows down the progress that we've made. The full cost of reconstructing a major bridge like this is high, probably an estimate as we get closer to knowing that number for sure is closer to a $64 million estimate all in. No city, large or small, can handle this type of cost on their own. We're exploring all local, state, and federal options to finance reconstruction, but ultimately this bridge has a regional significance that merits a large state investment. As a result, we respectfully request your support for including the bridge in any recommendations you make to the Capital Investment Committee. And as the senator has suggested, the more appropriate number for what we would see as a state share is the 47 as opposed to the 40 that's currently in the bill. I thank you for your attention and would stand for questions after Mr. Kramer has a chance to speak.
Great. Mr. Kramer, why don't you go quickly?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity. We certainly thank the senator for his support of this extraordinarily important commerce bridge. And I say commerce because...
Just introduce yourself for the record.
Oh, yes. Matt Kramer, president of the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. This bridge serves existing investments that the state and federal government has made in St. Paul, not to mention the downtown business community. Specifically, we talk about Union Depot, the Green Line at Central Corridor, and the new CHS Field in Lower Town. Without this investment, we're condemning all of these existing investments to almost a bastardized solution of trying to get people to and from them. A new bridge will serve commuters, it'll serve cars, it'll serve buses, it'll serve bike and pedestrian. Importantly, Mr. Chair and members, this bridge is a cornerstone of the new Gateway Corridor, a bus rapid transit connecting Woodbury to downtown St. Paul via the 3M campus. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for your support. Thank you for this investment.
Wow, you're good. That was quick. So, Senator Herr, I heard the number 47. I assume that was the amendment you were going to request to
yes.
the bill. Is that correct?
Yep. Amendment A1.
Oh, is there an A1? Well,
49, yeah.
There is. It's 49. What's the number
then? Oh, 49. Okay. All right. So why don't you just members, what the A1 does, and we'll just state it for the record because, like I said, we can't take action because we don't actually have possession of the bill, would change the number 40 million requested to 49, which you find on lines 1.8 and 1.22. So we'll note that for the record. Thank you, Senator Herr.
Okay.
Because as you probably see the back of the deck here, the estimates and all the components that go into the estimated replacement cost. I have a question.
Yes.
I think I know the answer. I think I've read in the media the account of this, but this bridge seems kind of new, 1981, because we were always talking about 50-year-old bridges. So how did it sounds like a faulty design. Is it just we didn't know back then, or is anyone responsible? Is there anyone out there, some engineering firm or anyone out there whom we can
Mr. Chair, we
discuss about the failed design? Senator Herr.
Yeah, I wasn't here when that bridge was built. So, but then
I was a sophomore in high school for the record.
We do have an engineer. Mr. Mayor can
Mayor Coleman.
Answer, yeah.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, certainly as much detail as you care to, we can provide for you, and there is some information in your package that have been handed out. The gist of this is that I think it was 1982 when this bridge was constructed, the design standard was different. And so this idea of the cantilever, where the bulk of the outside lanes are over the main structures of the bridge, is one that probably was instantly outdated the minute the bridge was built and had been changed. And so the challenge is, as we go to try to reconstruct it, is no one would sign off on this, given the way that it was designed to begin with. And so I won't blame the state, although it was a state project at the time. I'm sure that at the time it was probably within what was considered normal design guidelines. Mm-hmm. But given, I don't know if that was sensitivities given some of the structural collapses of bridges that we've seen, including in our own backyard, or if there's some other longer-term issues. But at the end of the day, we don't believe that there's anybody that is liable in the sense that they made a mistake. It was just at the time, the design standards were vastly different than they are today.
All right. Thank you. Questions? Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Herr, thank you for carrying this bill. And Mr. Kramer and Mayor Coleman, thank you for being here to testify.
And Mr. Cook is here
and
as well.
And Mr. Cook as well, 2 days in a row, session-wise, because he was here for Gateway on Friday. I just want to highlight and reiterate what Mayor Coleman mentioned in terms of this being a regional critical part of how this whole area works, because everybody coming in westbound on 94 from the East Metro, and that includes anybody who's come in off the 61 north or south, 494, 694, or all the way back to Wisconsin, if they're coming into downtown St. Paul for jobs or other activities, many of them are exiting right there at that exit that then takes them over that bridge. So it is a critical part of being able to get much of the East Metro into the downtown St. Paul area.
And we have the pleasure of driving across it ourselves in the Gateway Tour.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we experienced it. We were all clutching and hanging off for dear life. Senator Herr.
Mr. Chair, I do have another testifier, Mr. Tom Cook, in the room here. So,
Mr. Cook, if you can go quickly. We're kind of at time now. So. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Tom Cook from Metropolitan State University. I just want to highlight we offer upper division and graduate programs for 11,000 students across the metro. About a third of them come to our St. Paul campus every year. Soon that number will go up as the Science Education Center comes online next January, and thank you again for your support in last year's bonding bill for that construction. So that will mean a significant increase in the number of cars coming to campus for which we built a parking ramp. But again, and because we have classes timed for adult students, we have 6 rush hours a day, 8, 11, 1, 4, 6, and 9:30. So a lot of car traffic there. And we would support this investment to leverage the state's investment in higher education and in workforce development.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Appreciate your presence and your support for this. Anything further, members? Any questions? Anything further, Senator Herr?
Mr. Chair and members, I really appreciate your support of this bill. This, in addition to the wear and tear of this bill and, maybe default engineering at the start to this point, regardless, we're going to move forward to the Gateway Corridor. And if we're not going to upgrade this bridge, it won't support our infrastructure as we move forward. So this will be a wise investment toward a long-term solution. So thank you for hearing this bill.
Great. Thank you, Senator Herr. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Cook, Mr. Kramer.
Go wild.
All right. Okay. All right. Senator Rosen, are you ready? Senator Dames is part of a large collection of proposals for Highway 14, so we're going to clump those all together. So we'll do St. James, Trunk Highway 4.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't telling you. I just didn't know if you saw him, so I wasn't going to try to.
I was actually going to mention that to Senator Dames. Thank you for
being here. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 940 is an infrastructure improvement for the city of St. James, $7.13 million of improvements, including Highway 14. It does not require a local match and a bond sale of equal amount. I have with me the city manager of St. James, Joe McCabe, and the city financial advisor, Shannon Sweeney. Just briefly to give you an update, in 2010, they'll go into greater detail, there was they were required to do an update on their wastewater treatment facility, and St. James does have a limited tax base. In 2011, MnDOT told them that they wanted to do the Highway 4 improvements. And along with that, they also had some other major unfunded requirements that came along with that. So I want them to fill in the blanks on that. But the most important thing is it's very important for St. James. It is, it's going to be a huge change for that community because Highway 4 goes right through the town. And they just have a limited tax base, as I said. So,
all right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Joe McCabe. I'm the city manager for the city of St. James. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The project is 1.6 miles from the south end of the city to the north end of the city and will be a complete reconstruction using concrete as well as bringing the sidewalks into ADA compliance. There are two unique features that are part of this project, and that is the installation of 2 mini roundabouts, and this will be a first for the state of Minnesota, and a section of back-end diagonal parking in the business district. The state is going to save an estimated $600,000 by constructing the mini roundabouts rather than installing signal lights. In addition, the city is, for economic scale, going to address 100-year-old infrastructure needs by completing 7 additional projects adjacent to the Highway 4 project. And these are only being done because of the Highway 4 project. 2 major side projects are directly tied to the highway project, as we need to make sure that once the concrete is put in place, we're not disturbing it for a number of years. We are going to be impacting over 90 families, 47 businesses, 41 senior citizens who are living alone, and 31 apartment and rental units, which are basically individuals that are low to moderate income. Mr. Sweeney will now give you information in regards to the financial impact. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Sweeney.
Thank you. Chair Dibbles, Shannon Sweeney with the City of St. James. I am their financial advisor. Just wanted to mention a couple of points. City of St. James is about 4,600 in population. They do have about $13 million in existing debt. $7 million of that was for a recent mandate from the state to upgrade their wastewater treatment. The proposed project would add another $7 million to that, taking them to $20 million, essentially nearly doubling their debt per capita. They have already been downgraded by a credit rating agency as a result of having high levels of debt in the community. Again, most of that debt coming through funding mandated improvements that are required for wastewater treatment. It's an important project. It's important that they have assistance in funding the project. It's a small community. This is a very large dollar amount that they have to take on. To not do the project, you know, as we all understand, would not be the wise thing to do, because once you build a new street, you don't want to dig it up immediately to replace 100-year-old infrastructure. So it's a necessary improvement, and we appreciate any assistance that the state can provide to the community. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sweeney. Questions, members? I have a question, Senator Rosen, or actually for Mr. McCabe. Tell me more about the mini roundabouts, and why will those be the first, or what makes
why
them unique to
they're
Minnesota?
They're unique in that they are a maximum of 4 inches high. The truckers have a real difficult time traveling around some of the roundabouts within the state right now.
Uh-huh.
They'll be able to drive right over these.
Oh, I see. So if they want to go straight through, they can just...
No, they still have to follow a roundabout. Our senior citizens will probably be driving right over.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
On Highway 169 through Blue Earth, which is a little bigger than St. James, but not much, they put in three regular roundabouts. They have mitigated that very well, the older population in that. But these, the mini ones, will be able to just kind of, yeah.
So they just kind of go. They're a little easier on the navigation.
Because it is a major.
Yeah, roundabouts have been quite an adjustment for folks.
That's right.
They work well, but you got to get used to them. And if you're not used to them, and you've been driving around Minnesota for, you know, 75 years, and all of a sudden you have to figure out a roundabout, that's a challenge.
Mr. Chair, you can imagine three in a small town of the older population. It was good. They did no major accidents, so it was very controversial, but they've survived. So
good. Excellent. Anything further? Senator Culverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess on our trip that we took around the state, we did go to Cannon Falls, and they were talking about their roundabouts. And something in my memory says that they regretted it very, very much. And I'm wondering, and maybe Senator Kent can help with exactly what the issues were, but people were driving straight through them. Plus, it was really a big negative for them down there.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, I think the more significant aspect was when they made all the changes along 52 and they eliminated some of the entrance and access points to the town, and so the roundabouts were sort of just an extra adjustment in addition to really changing traffic in and out of the Central Business District.
Yes, right. Senator Kiffmeyer has a memory.
I think they were
has insight.
I think they were kind of the demon. They were demonizing the roundabout because it had something to do with the cutoff of access.
Yeah,
that's what it was. Senator Chairman, I've just thank you. I was just going to comment that I've driven around several roundabouts, and there are many different designs. I think they're getting better at it, but sometimes the curbing is so low that they allow for that. And so they're beginning to understand the importance of visually having some barriers or sight barriers as they're going along, especially when they are brand new. But I think some of their design elements and structural elements are getting better, so they kind of help avoid that. Because you really shouldn't be able to drive over a roundabout or have enough that it's just an incline, because that is a potential, especially when it's wet, dark,
right.
That combination, reflection, and all that stuff. They need some extra help. That's just a safety. But I think their design elements are better.
Right. Yeah, I think they're getting better. Senator Rosen.
And just a shout-out to MnDOT and Supervisor Greg Ouse and his team. They've done a great job at making sure that a lot of these concerns are taken care of. These mini roundabouts will be in the town, in the main part
business
of the town,
district.
The business district. And so they have to accommodate the size restrictions.
Excellent. Great. Thank you. Anything further, Senator Rosen?
No, Mr. Chair. I would certainly appreciate your consideration of this and the unique circumstances that St. James brings to the table and to your committee. And thank you very much for the hearing.
Yeah. Sounds like you're carrying a heavy load for a lot of state initiatives. So
yeah.
Appreciate your bringing that to our attention. All right. Thank you, Senator Rosen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. So we're going to start the Highway 14 series, and Senator Dames has been waiting patiently. We have this cluster of bills, items 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 on the agenda that all relate to Highway 14. So we'll try to take those in series, but starting with Senator Dames because he's here. Senate File 1956. Okay. All right. Oh, and I see Senator Sharon is in the room, too, so she's going to further illuminate us about Highway 14 and all the opportunities we have there. Welcome, Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here to present Senate File number 1956. Senate File 1956 is for some bonding money for Highway 14 from Nicollet to the Highway 1415 interchange near New Ulm, Minnesota. This is part of the highway process that's been going on for many years, and there's bits and pieces throughout Highway 14 that have not been done, and so this is some bonding request to fill out some of that those areas. Today I have with me Audrey Shanneman, the president of the New Ulm Chamber, and Gary Haley, the president of Beacon Promotions, and they would like to speak a little about this. Before I turn it over to Audrey, I'd just like to point out a couple things about the section of Highway 14 from Mankato to New Ulm. It's an unusual piece of highway. There's about three areas there. First, it's the if we take a look at the percentage of commercial traffic that we have on that highway versus regular automobile traffic, it's quite a high percentage. And with that, it is a highway that has some safety issues and safety concerns. And then also, this is an excellent opportunity for some economic development. So with that said, I'll turn it over to Audrey Shanneman, the president of the chamber.
Welcome, Ms. Shanneman.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Chairman Dibble and the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to bring some good news from New Ulm today for you. My name is Audra Shanneman, and I am the president and CEO of the New Ulm Area Chamber of Commerce. If you're not familiar with New Ulm, we are a community of 13,500 citizens. We are home to Herman the German, Flandreau State Park, Martin Luther College, and the second oldest family-owned brewery in the nation, Schell's Brewery, which produces German craft beers, and Green Belt, if you're familiar with those. Not that you may want to admit that for the record, that you're familiar with those. But Our major industries are agriculture and manufacturing, and the chamber represents 340 members and 5,700 full-time employees. Highway 14 is a big concern to our business district and our business community, as New Ulm is a center of commerce. We're the county seat for Brown County, 3M, Kraft, Firmenich, Parker Hennepin, Spexis, and Windings all have production facilities in our community. We also have a lot of trucking companies like J.R. Schugel and DNA Trucking. In fact, you may see those trucks on the road. And our New Ulm Medical Center, with its affiliation with Allina Health Systems, just recently completed a $5.3 million expansion that included a birth center and a cancer center. In 2014, the first time on the ballot, a $47 million building referendum was approved for a new high school. We're here today to remind you of the important role that communities like New Ulm and Nicollet contribute to the state's economic success. New Ulm is a center of commerce, but we are not an island, and we must be safely and efficiently connected to other regional centers. Highway 14 connects New Ulm's products and our people to Nicollet, Mankato, Rochester, the metro area, and beyond. It's estimated that approximately 1,000 trucks are dispatched out of New Ulm daily. These trucks are traveling on Highway 14, which is New Ulm's primary route to I-35 and I-90. On the economic development side, we hear from site selectors that they love our location, our hard workforce, and our economic environment, but they require a four-lane access, which we don't have. So the current condition of Highway 14 knocks New Ulm off of the list for potential development and expansion. We are actively recruiting manufacturing and retail to come to New Ulm. Our businesses are hiring and have many good positions with benefits that they are trying to fill. Include healthcare professionals, education professionals, manufacturing workers, and product engineers. We're here today to encourage legislators to truly make transportation infrastructure a priority and fund it appropriately. New Ulm is experiencing economic growth, and we don't want to be held back by the current condition of Highway 14. At this point, I'd like to introduce Gary Haley. He's the president and COO of Beacon Promotions, which is located in New Ulm.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Haley. Just introduce yourself and then proceed.
I'm Gary Haley, president of Beacon Promotions in New Ulm, Minnesota.
Thank you very much for listening to our plea for Highway 14. Beacon Promotions is a manufacturer of promotional products. We decorate writing instruments, calendars, name badges, a wide range of products with an advertiser's imprint. An advertiser might be a business, a nonprofit, might even carry a political slogan. Who knows? You know, promotional product carries a variety of things. We sell nationwide to over 10,000 different distributors, and we produce over 46,000 individual orders a year and ship 125,000 packages out of our facility every year. We have a special relationship with UPS, but UPS for us is we're on the end of their line. We are an attractive company from a national distribution standpoint, but when we're at the end of a two-lane highway like we are at Highway 14, take some of that attractiveness away from our business around the country. Beacon Promotions is a growing company. We've been in business for 12 years. We started in New Ulm for a variety of good and solid reasons. We've acquired 10 businesses in that 12-year period. We moved them all to New Ulm. We look for more growth. We have 125 employees, and we draw from an area of around 40 miles around New Ulm. Many of our employees come from Mankato. And they travel Highway 14 every day. We're concerned about the safety of Highway 14 as well as the transportation economies of it for all of our employees that we have today and the ones we hope to employ in the years to come. So thank you for listening. Do you have any questions?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Haley. Mm-hmm. Questions, members? Oh, Senator Carlson.
Senator, Mr. Chair, I'm having great trouble here looking at some of the numbers that we're hearing and why we're hearing these and what funds these bonds are going to create. Are they going to create trunk highway bonds? Are they going to be, some cases GO? How are we going to pay for this?
thank you, Senator Carlson. The bills that we're hearing, some are trunk highway bonds, and some are general obligation bonds. I think it depends on whether we're talking about local roads, county roads, city roads, et cetera, or state highways. In those cases, of course, we know we can't do geo bonding for state highways. The trunk highway bonds, as we all know, the trunk highway fund at its present condition is maxed out. There's no bonding capacity within the existing resources that we have, maybe a little bit because of just natural inflationary growth, but certainly not very much. Yours is the existential question of the session. That remains to be seen.
I guess
we obviously need to put more resources on it.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I'm hearing, I see in here that we're looking at right-of-way acquisition. I think right-of-way acquisition, that can be done with GO bonds. Am I correct in that?
Not if the purpose is for a trunk highway.
Not as long as it's trunk highway. Okay. So, and we're seeing a lot of these bonds are written as coming from trunk highway bonds. So do we need to decide whether this is going to be trunk highway at this level, or are we just going to follow the
excellent
whatever
question.
The bill says?
That's an excellent question, Senator Carlson. So we don't actually have possession of these bills, so we're making no actual decisions in the committee, but this is the opportunity, of course, to bring the project ideas forward, give them full hearing, hear from the local community as well. That typically doesn't occur in the Capital Investments Committee itself. It hasn't in the past. Just like with the other some of that stuff is heard, but most of the time the individual divisions, finance divisions hear about the capital investment requests that are under their basic wheelhouse. In terms of deciding, the source of bond dollars, that's kind of made for us in the Constitution. As far as deciding which projects are actually funded, which projects we don't typically earmark either in the transportation bill or even in the capital investments bill for transportation purposes, except for transit projects for whatever reasons. Usually we create an eligible list and we don't do a specific earmark. with dollar amounts attached to those transit projects. However, that being said, this process still has a tremendous amount of utility because it's the opportunity for legislative leaders, local leaders, to highlight the need, the priority, demonstrate the motivation, the local participation, business community participation. Oftentimes there are other resources that are being brought to the table, local matches, private matches, sometimes applications for TED funds, those sorts of things. So it's an opportunity to engage and give your the ideas you have for projects that will achieve local livability, quality of life, and economic objectives, a little bit of momentum, a little bit of engagement with the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation, DEED, and others. Does that answer your question?
Largely,
yeah.
Mr. Chair.
And
yes.
the other thing, you know, frankly, you know, I don't think it's any secret. The other goal I have as the chair is to show there's a tremendous need. We need to pass a transportation bill that puts resources on the table. And that's evident by the 3 days of hearings we're having with all these projects. You know, there's a pent-up need to do stuff around the state in terms of making investments in our communities.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, because you just said what was on my mind. Yes.
All right. Very good. Thanks. Senator Dames, anything further?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate your hearing Senate File 1956, and thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Dames. Really appreciate your coming forward and presenting this project to us. And I don't mind saying that I like Shell's and Grain Belt. I'm not super familiar with it because I don't drink that much beer, but I like it when I drink it. Senator Sharon, continuing with the Highway 14 story.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. May I make an unusual request of you to allow
yes.
Senator Jensen to present before me because she has prepared some materials for the overview of the Highway 14 concept and that I would be playing off of, and I'd prefer to have her, and then I could follow up right afterwards.
Absolutely. Senator Jensen. You can share the table if you want to just hang out up there. Senator Jensen, 923, Senate File 923, number 6 on our agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is the third time that I've been before this committee to talk about the needs and request funding for a highway that's been out there, started and not completed for about 50 years. So I wanted to come this year and bring some other interesting facts that maybe we haven't heard about the highway. Just real quickly, in 1925, the Joint Board of Transportation completed its reports identifying the main roads and suggested a numbering system, which included Highway 14, U.S. Highway 14, from Winona to New Ulm, and then suggested on to Brookings, South Dakota. So in 1933, Highway 14 at Winona was extended to Chicago on the east, and in 1938 extended west to Yellowstone National Park. It was then known as the Black and Yellow Trail. The interesting thing is during a speech of the Trail Association, historian Doan Robinson revealed his idea of having statues carved into the Black Hills as a tourist attraction. And he went on to do that and complete that, and we know what that has done for the state of South Dakota. So an interesting fact for you. I did prepare a map. This is the most interesting one that I've seen in the 3 years that I've been advocating for this road. And it looks like this if you want to take a look at it. It really exemplifies the work, the hard work that people have been doing on this project. And I'll start over in Rochester. So in the 1960s, $5.5 million was expended for 13 miles of road to Cassin. From that point, we completed an EIS study in 1993 to try to finish from Owatonna to Dodge Center, and that's what my bill appropriates money for. I don't want anyone to misunderstand. We've been doing work on Highway 14, but it's a total of about 110 miles that we're trying to complete. So where does the anxiety come in is that it's taken so long to finish each one of these sections. And I wanted you to take a look at this map for another reason. I think this is a very, very good example of why our funding and our transportation system needs stable, reliable, predictable, dependable funding
and enough to complete some of these projects. If you take a look at this, encompasses two districts in MnDOT. So you also have to coordinate all of these communities along this road. You have to communicate collaboration between districts. An EIS statement that was done in 1993, if we have to rely on money depending on a biennium basis, this project would never have been started, let alone completed, in my opinion. So what we need, what we're looking at in this bill, is to make sure that the work continues, that we were able to get some money from Corridors of Commerce. And I just want to let members know and understand that if we don't get Senator Carlson some cash money into the process, you can't use trunk highway bonding money to purchase right away. And what we were able to do in the past 2 years is we were awarded some money, some cash money, to do right away purchase. And we still need about $30 million to finish purchasing what's left on the map from Owatonna to Dodge Center. To be even competitive if we get money into the Corridors of Commerce program. So this is vital for you to see that this is a system. It connects very large communities with each other, and I hope that you take that seriously when we take a look at how we're going to fund our transportation system. I have some people here with me that would like to talk to the bill. First, I have, who do I have? Guy Kohlnoffer, he's the Dodge County Commissioner.
So before that, Senator Westrom had a question.
Mr. Chair, we can let the testifiers come
okay,
first.
Great. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record. And
thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. My name is Guy Kohlnoffer. I'm the Dodge County Engineer. As much as I'd like to be a commissioner, I'm not. It'd be a step up.
Well, you're the engineer.
Yes, I'm the engineer for the Dodge
Way
County Highway Department. And that said, they
Did
don't
give
let me out.
Demotion or promotion? I'm not sure.
That said, they don't let me out much, so I have to apologize if I stumble along here a little bit. But as the county engineer, people have come to me over the years. The sheriff, deputies, different citizens have come to me with their problems on Dodge on the Trunk Highway 14 and what I can do to fix it. And just as the county engineer, I have to explain to them that I can't fix it for them. That's a state issue. But some of the stories that they bring to me are such as back in 2011, a deputy was telling me about a call that he responded to of a school bus that had stopped east of Claremont along the two-lane section to let a student off. And not moments before he left let the student off, he looked in his rearview mirror and there was a semi coming quite quickly. So he had to grab the student by the collar, yank him back into the bus as the semi passed on the shoulder between the bus and the mother waiting in the driveway. So I don't think that student's ever going to realize how close he came to not being with us anymore. As well as farmers that come to me quite often about what we're going to do about 14 because they have to drive it with their equipment that, as you know, farm equipment is slow and large. And the numerous close calls that they come to with the vehicles that are going back and forth and get a little impatient on the two-lane section because they're used to driving along a four-way section. Just last week, I was heading out to Owatonna, heading west, and as the four-lane section just west of Dodge Center next down to two-lane, I was behind a young lady and a semi-truck. The lady pulled out to pass the semi, and I don't think she realized that it was no longer a four-lane because she stayed in the left lane for quite some time, and fortunately the cars that were coming at her were flashing their lights, and I thought I was going to see a pretty good crash, or a pretty bad crash, but she swerved over just in time while the other cars took the shoulder. And then another story that's even closer to heart, you might have heard this gentleman's wife come and testify at different issues, and that's of Scott Hodgman. He was a friend of mine. He was a commissioner. He was a township officer. In November 6th, 2012, he crossed over on the two-lane section and hit head-on with a truck carrying three people that were just finishing up cancer treatment for the young boy in the truck. The father, the boy, and Scott Hodgman were killed in that crash. And to bring it even a little bit closer, as the county engineer, I had to do the fatal crash review for that. So that was kind of tough for me to do. I'm sorry. And as a county engineer, I have my own issues in Dodge County. I have to work on the county roads. But fixing Trunk Highway 14 is a high priority for Dodge County, getting it up to a four-lane road to fix the problems that we have. And as it is a trunk highway, I can't fix that. You guys can do that. The legislator can do that through your funding or your pressure of the federal government to try to fix that, and that's why I'm here today. As the two ends grow, what Rochester grows and the west end gets finished, this little segment left in between as a two-lane, the traffic grows on that as people are more willing to take that route from the west end of the state into Rochester. And, well, there's only 7 miles left that they have to take that's a two-lane, so they're willing to put up with that. Well, that's a lot of, as you hear from the west end, that's a lot of commercial vehicles taking this route. I've been taking the route for over 30 years. I'm from up in Lakeville, but I went to school out in Brookings, and my wife-to-be was going out to school in Winona. So as a young student, I was driving that route many years ago, and I was kind of surprised how much traffic was on it, and yet it was, for the most part, a rural two-lane road. So that's really all I have to say. If you can put anything into fixing this road, we'd really appreciate it and try to save those hazards. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Is it Kohlenhofer?
Yes, Kohlenhofer.
Kohlenhofer, great, thank you. Appreciate those words, our condolences on the loss, mm-hmm. on your loss, and thank you for sharing that. We're just remarking we've had a lot of tears in transportation this year, and I think mm-hmm. it has something to do with the condition of our roads. Questions, members, for Mr. Kohlenhofer? All right, Senator Jensen.
I also have with me Mayor Tom Kuntz, the mayor of the city of Owatonna.
Welcome, Mayor Kuntz.
Thank you. Senator Dibble, committee chair, committee members. You know, first I got to say thank you for taking your time to tour Greater Minnesota so you have a better understanding of what Greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area needs are. Without that tour, I think we'd have a harder time selling what our message really is. So thanks for that. I'm a lifelong resident of Owatonna, and back in the 70s, we started talking about Highway 14 and having Highway 14 completed from Rochester to New Ulm. We made great progress in the last 10 years, but we still have a long ways to go. One of the things that is my passion is economic development. And when we talk about economic development, about 75% or a great portion of economic development in southern Minnesota occurs along Highway 14. Last year, you just awarded a large sum of money to Rochester for the Mayo Clinic in that area. We still don't have a four-lane highway that going east and west that gives access to the Mayo Clinic. That little section of Owatonna to Dodge Center does create a bottleneck, and it doesn't help provide economic development, doesn't help provide the adequate transportation going to Rochester that we need. I know you have a huge challenge in front of you because just listening to all the testimony that I've just heard since I've been here, it's going to be a hard decision to figure out where all those dollars are going to go that are very, very limited. But I hope you consider Highway 14 as part of that process.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Kuntz. Senator Sharon. Yeah.
I could speak to these bills, which are Senate File 508 and Senate File 515 at the same time,
sure.
If you would like me to.
Yeah, that would be great.
The essential contents of the bill are the same as the bill that Senator Dames has already presented and those testifiers spoke to. So I just would just add a few comments about that. First of all, I want to echo that, you know, the decisions for how to spend money in the bonding bill or in other sources of revenue for these highways does not include the planning dollars that we need to make sure at some port get incorporated somehow, either in the corridors of commerce language or somewhere along that. I just want to reemphasize that. And then I would just refer back to this graph that has been prepared for you by Senator Jensen. The bills that I am presenting here relate to the other end of the corridor on your left-hand side of the map from Nicollet to New Ulm. There's the two projects, the four-way lane expansion and also for the interchange that is at New Ulm. And Senator Dames and the testifiers have already spoken about that, especially from New Ulm's perspective. But I'm here really representing the entire corridor because when we really began, and you have heard over and over again about this corridor as an east-west corridor of commerce, as a corridor that not only serves for economic development, but also it is a corridor that is used by people who work in these various communities on very dangerous two-lane, it's been very dangerous two-lane, and children that are moving back and forth between these communities to compete with each other in high school events or to attend each other's programs. So it's been a very complicated problem that not only is important for economic development, but for a safety issue in the communities all along the corridor. So you know, you've heard from us over and over again about the importance of this east-west corridor. We developed a coalition that really tried to consistently over time communicate the importance of the corridor to the economic development of the southern part of this state, that it is the east-west corridors as well as those that lead directly from the south to the north and into the metropolitan area that help resolve some of the congestion issues that exist in the metropolitan area and allow for economic development to occur outside of the state. So I'm here in support of these two bills, but really for all of the investment that I want to thank this legislature for already on the Highway 14 projects. We're very close to being able to resolve all of the issues. I really appreciated the testimony about how, as we get closer to completing this, that there's more and more traffic because it is creating these economic development opportunities. So some of these sections are becoming even more dangerous. And I've just mentioned two. One is the Walmart distribution center that's been developed in Mankato now because we have made this investment in Highway 14. It is offering 400 new jobs, Senator, and the minimum payment is $16 an hour plus benefits, vacation. It's an amazing opportunity for employment and for growth of the economy in southern Minnesota. But those trucks, and that's a lot of trucks moving in and out of that distribution center, are going to be getting caught, clogged up on segments of this highway that are not completed. And the Mayo Health System, you were talking about the expansions in Rochester of the Mayo Clinic. Well, there's been enormous expansions in the entire Mayo system. A major regional center for Mayo is in the Mankato area and also has all of this transport that's occurring between all the communities on the corridor that are a part of the Mayo Health System. So I'm here advocating for the expansion that is seen on your graph that runs from Nicollet to New Ulm and the Exchange for all the reasons I've indicated, and I really appreciate over the years the time this committee has given to understand the complex and important needs of Highway 14.
Great. Thank you. I see Ms. Shaneman is listed as well for these two bills. Did you have anything more you wanted to add?
I do not have additional.
Okay. Great. Thanks. I appreciate your being here for those elements and those segments as well. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Okay. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator. And Senator Jensen and Senator Sharon, your testifiers. I took a look at several of these Highway 14 bills, and I can't quite tell for sure. And so it looks like if you took all the money from all of these bills, it's probably close to $700 million. I can't tell if there's overlap for sure because, you know, the description is too short.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, the bills that Senator Sharon and myself are carrying are not duplicate, but Senator Senjum's is a duplicate of mine and Senator Dames is a duplicate of Senator Sharon's. Good. So the total then for the entire would be what mine is about $260 million and whatever.
Well, I don't need the exact numbers. It's okay.
So there were duplicates in there. That's correct.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, a little related to that, but I've got multiple committees going on, so I might have missed this in the very beginning. So I apologize, and it doesn't have to be a very lengthy answer. Just what I understand and from the testimony, we've got 4-lane from Rochester to Casson years ago. That continues to Dodge Center now as 4-lane, and from Dodge Center to Owatonna is 2-lane. And then what's the status of Owatonna to Mankato? I thought I heard that was mostly or all completed as 4-lane. First question.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom. The section
the original section was 13 miles from Casson to Rochester to Casson, and that was done in the 1960s. So that's when that one was done. Okay. And then there were segments from Owatonna to Casson that we've been working on. 2 miles were completed in 2003, and 9 miles were completed in 2001 that went to Dodge Center from Casson. So okay. Then what we're looking at now is the miles that are left from Owatonna to Dodge Center in Mybell.
Okay, and Mr. Chair,
12
Senator
miles,
Jensen,
yes.
Some and of that, because from Dodge Center to Owatonna is further than 7 miles, but did I hear 7 miles of that is what's not completed yet?
12 miles is not Senator complete, Jensen. But we did get some money for, through Corridors of Commerce to complete 3 miles that's not completed yet.
That's not completed.
Oh, I see. 12 minus 3, so there's 9 miles incomplete.
12 plus yet. The 3, I'm sorry.
So what about Senator from West. Owatonna to Mankato? And a few years ago, if I can add this editorial, I was down in that area on one of the holidays and coming from Mankato towards Rochester. And
Senator Westrom.
14
Senator.
Went through Owatonna, then you had to jog and go over on the freeway and then get on. Is that being fixed, or is that still kind of the clumsy way to get through?
The Senator Highway Jackson. 14 has been, thank you, Mr. Chair, has been completed from Mankato to Waseca, or to Owatonna, right to Owatonna. Mm-hmm. And so what we're talking about is from Owatonna then to Dodge Center that has left to be completed.
For that section.
Senator Westrom.
That's okay. Correct.
So, Mr. Chair, what about going around Owatonna? Does it still go through Owatonna with several stop signs, or is there a bypass that was part of that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, Guy Kolanoff, for County Engineer. The section west of Owatonna has been realigned, and it is now a straight shot for all the four-lane and the two-lane all the way from Mankato to Rochester. However, the section that picks up about 3 miles east of Owatonna is currently being constructed as a four-lane, and when constructed as a four-lane from there to Dodge Center, will be realigned to south of the railroad tracks and be a slightly more straight line between Owatonna and Rochester.
Oh, I see. So that is
Senator Westrom.
To that question, Mr. Chair, and Senator Jensen and Senator Damesville and Sharon's maybe covers. From Mankato west, then, is there any four-lane now on Highway 14? I know that goes to New Ulm. How much of that's four-lane, if any?
Senator Sharon.
I'm going to try to figure out how many miles. There is a proposal to complete the four-lane to Nicollet, and that's anticipated to be programmed for 2018 between Mankato and Nicollet. That's programmed to be completed
Senator
in 2018.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, that would be about how many miles towards New Ulm?
Oh, then the next section, the section that we're talking about in this bill, is from Nicollet to New Ulm.
Well, New Ulm. Okay, yeah. And that's approximately how many miles, Senator Sharon?
Senator Sharon.
22 miles.
22. Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Mayor Kuntz.
Just one last comment. Having dollars in the Corridors of Commerce is very, very important. You know, we wouldn't have been able to get the 2.5 miles of 14 done if we weren't shovel-ready. And we still have some areas that we have to buy right-of-way to make shovel-ready projects. That shovel-ready project allowed us to get a Tiger Grant to finish that 2.5 miles just going east of Owatonna. So Corridors of Commerce money is extremely important in order to buy right-of-way.
Thank you, Mayor. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last thing that I'd like to point out is if you look at the very first one that was done in the 1960s, they did 13 miles at $5.5 million. Compared to the amount of money that we're looking at, Senator Westrom, on the roadways that are left to complete in this project, mine is 260 projected. The longer we wait and the longer we try to figure out how we're going to fund this, the more expensive each one of these sections is going to be.
Thank you. All right. Anything further? No. Did I hear that Senator Senjum, your bill is the same as one of the bills? Or?
Yes, Rich. I think the dollar amount's different. But.
Okay. All right. Why don't we invite you up to
complete this Highway 14 story.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, question for Senator Jensen while Senator Senjum's coming up.
Senator Jensen.
Senator Jensen, in one of your in your statements, you were talking about an EIS.
That's correct.
Thought you were referred to back in the 1990s, but could you restate that? And my question is, what did that cost us to do about, if you have an idea? And, when was that done?
Senator Westrom, the EIS itself?
Yeah, she referred to an EIS that was done back 20, 30 years ago. Is that on the stretch from Casson to Rochester or from Casson to Dodge Center?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, that's the section from Owatonna to Dodge Center. They did an EIS and completed an EIS in 1993. I'm not familiar what the cost was, but we had to redo it in 2010. So there was another EIS completed in 2010 because there's a certain time frame you have to utilize and do something on the road. Otherwise, you lose your EIS. So we had an additional one in 2010. I'm not familiar with the price of the EIS studies.
Senator
Westrom.
Senator Jensen, I think for the committee, if you could get that information to us and myself and maybe MnDOT has it, I'd be interested to know what we spent on it. I'm not familiar with any EISs that aren't in the hundreds of thousands, if not more. The reason I bring it up, Mr. Chair and committee members, as we talk about the funding for transportation, I think it brings and highlights a perfect example, and I've heard more and more discussion about this and frustration from local units of government and even those in MnDOT. What do we need an EIS for two times on a road that already exists in our state? And so, Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, I'd love to work with you on also having us look at those types of reforms that could take cost drivers out of the system when we are dealing with a road that's been in place for decades. We're going to either improve it or widen it. We ought to find ways to not have to redo EISs every 15 years or maybe have some of those processes in place that takes away from ultimately building more roads. And so I think it highlights a problem that maybe goes untold a little too much.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, part of the issue with this EIS study is we're moving the road and routing it around a city of Claremont, which needed an EIS statement. And what happens is you have to make sure you're looking at the best route as far as soil conditions and some of those types of things. The section that was from looks like Mankato to Owatonna, there was some poor soil that was discovered during the EIS, and it cost us about $4 million, but we cleaned it up. We were able to do those kinds of things. So because we're rerouting part of the road and not just building it on the right where it's at, the EIS is necessary to make sure we're studying the soil to get it in the best possible location.
Thank you.
Thank
if we
you.
Could get those costs, I'd
I would be glad to do that, Senator Westrom. I'll
thank
get
you.
Those for you.
MnDOT is in the room, so I think they hear you. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And so much has been said. I'll try not to be repetitious, and I'll try to be brief. But Senator Jensen referred this to as the black and yellow highway, and truly it was. I hate to say I'm almost old enough to remember that. But actually, I had a bill on it a couple of years ago. We designated it such. But it's also, if you will, not officially designated, certainly in statute, but the Star Tribune a couple of years ago in a two-part article identified Highway 14 as the highway of horror. And it certainly is. I think many of us, at least that live in that part of the state, I probably drive Highway 14 maybe once a week or so. I drove it Saturday. So quite familiar with it, but we're also quite familiar on a more personal basis, whether it was Scott Hodgman or Mr. Woodwick from Hayfield, individuals that we've known personally that have lost their life on that highway, and of course many have over the course of years. It just has taken on, and deservedly so, that kind of death trap kind of reputation. And for all the reasons were cited, heavy traffic, a lot of truck traffic, a lot of agricultural vehicle traffic, an ethanol plant in Claremont, on and on. As we talk about Destination Medical Center in Rochester, even today, 56,000 people drive from outside of Rochester into Rochester to work. And I don't have any numbers, but I'm just going to guess at least 10% of those probably come from the Owatonna-Waseca area, coming in, going back, and so on and so forth. So it is a very, very heavily traveled highway. And while we don't come to this table legislating highway projects, I think, you know, obviously we come here legislating funding for highway projects. My hope, and I think all of our hopes, is that for those people that assemble in that little basement office in the MnDOT building every year or so to decide what they're going to do, a little secret huddle, as I often refer to, I hope they're listening today, and I hope they're listening to our pleas to move Highway 14 forward as soon as possible. So I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Senator Sendrum. Questions, members? All right. Anything further, Senator Jensen or Senator Sendrum? All right. Thank you. This map is really great. It's really informative, very useful. It really gives you the entire scale and scope from one end to the other. So we're not gonna extend it over to Sleepy Eye there. You throw them into the mix. All right. All right, thank you. Next. Oh, Senator Coonan is here. All right. Senator Coonan, you're hiding out. All right. We'll see you there. Senate File 1743. Welcome, Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee.
Appleton.
Senate File 1743 is a million-dollar appropriation from bond proceeds for the township of Appleton in Swift County, and this is for a road improvement on a township road. It'll help, well, first of all, for safety issues, but also to try and eliminate some bottlenecks and improve traffic efficiency. And I'll turn it over to my testifiers to give the committee a better overview of what the project is about. And, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you, we'll start with Mr. Aslan.
Welcome, Mr. Aslan. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chris Aslan. I am a supervisor on the Appleton Township Board and also an employee of Western Consolidated Cooperative. And thank you for letting us talk to you today about Senate File 1743. Western Consolidated Cooperative, otherwise known as Westcon, is a regional agribusiness that has over 2,000 co-op members. We have locations in Holloway, Appleton, Ortonville, Kensington, and St. Leo, Minnesota, and also in Trinbrook, South Dakota. We handle about 35 to 40 million bushels of grain each year, and we have shuttle loading facilities, grain elevators in Trinbrook, South Dakota, and Holloway, Minnesota, that are serviced from the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway. We are presently going to be upgrading our grain elevator in Appleton, Minnesota, and that's going to be a pretty important project. It's our board of directors that approved an $18 upgrade to that facility, and that's going to be an additional 1.2 million bushels of storage, expanded grain drying, and faster grain receiving capabilities there. Most importantly, about upgrading Appleton to a 110-car shuttle loader, is we are also going to be able to load Union Pacific and Canadian Pacific railway cars on that rail line through an agreement with the Twin Cities and Western, which that facility is currently on. With that upgrade, we are expecting an increased volume of truck traffic, and I believe you have a handout that shows our presentation. And if you would turn to page 2, there is an intersection right in Appleton. And customer truck traffic currently enters the facility in Appleton off of State Highway 119 and will continue to do so after the upgrade is completed. There is no entrance or exit road adjoining the facility to State Highway 7. In Appleton, there is a difficult corner to make connecting State Highway 7 and State Highway 119. Truck semi-trailer traffic must make a severe 35-degree turn to get on 119 and must also yield to traffic going south onto 119 from Highway 7 coming from the north. There is a curve in Highway 7 at this location which makes it difficult to see traffic coming from the north before making your turn onto the south onto 119. Also, northbound traffic pulls right up to Highway 7, making room to complete the turn hazardous with a semi-trailer. To help solve this issue with the semi-trailer truck traffic getting to our facility from State Highway 7, we are proposing to upgrade a mile section of Township Gravel Road, which is 100th Street Southwest, which is located 1 mile south of the intersection discussed. We are recommending paving this road to a 10-ton class road and connecting Highway 7 to State Highway 119. On each side of this mile-long stretch of 100th Street Southwest, there are triangle intersections connecting to both of the state highways, 119 and Highway 7. We are recommending eliminating both of those triangle intersections and replacing them with 90-degree intersections to both state highways. We see several benefits for this upgrade. We're expecting, because we will be able to upgrade Appleton to a 110-car shuttle loader, and also the additional markets we'll receive for our cooperative members by being able to load cars on the Union Pacific and the Canadian Pacific for this road upgrade and for the increased truck traffic that the Appleton facility will receive. We have been in contact with the Appleton Township Board, the county administrator of Swift County, the Minnesota DOT. We also have 300 letters of support from our cooperative members for the project, and also letters of support from several other businesses, trucking companies, the city of Appleton. Otherwise, thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman, and I'll defer to Mr. Silty about some tax benefits on the project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And
welcome, Mayor Silty. Mr. Osland, did you want to submit those letters for the record? We can have someone take those from you, and we'll put them in the file and make them the official part of the official record.
Sure, that'd be great.
All right, we'll have someone come grab those from you. Great. Welcome, Mayor Silty. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Chairman, members of the committee, for hearing the Senate file 1743. Also, I am mayor of Appleton. One of the things that has been brought some value as far as the project of Westcon has been about an additional value of about $2.3 million of taxable value. What that brings back to our local level is about $142,000 of additional tax revenue that we would be able to receive. Now, the city has been able to grant Westcon, due to its high tax rate, a TIF district also, and we have also approved them for some abatement due to the high tax rate that the city does have with the loss of our large employer CCA correctional facility out there. So we are working with that. Another thing that we have seen in it, so to help the project that we do have, we also see other businesses that will be affected benefit from this. One would be Beastman Trucking, who sees approximately about 6,600 trucks go through this intersection annually. AGP, or Ag Processors out of Dawson, Minnesota, they have increased their capacity of processing up to 70,000 bushels of beans per day. That increases the truck traffic there of about 25,000 trucks annually. And that doesn't also contribute to the livestock industry, which runs about 25,000 trucks through that intersection that would be able to use this road for smoother flow. In addition to that, if and when, and as a mayor, we certainly hope if and when the CCA were to open back up, you know, that would be another 200 and some odd employees that would be able to utilize this road. Bulk of the employees from there would come from the surrounding area. Due to Appleton being about a 1,200-person population, we don't have the capacity to house all the employees that would work there. So they would come from the surrounding areas, and they also would be able to make use of that. So any support or the approval of this would be greatly appreciated for our area and for the local community, and also for the employers and the businesses that we do have. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mayor. Senator Jensen has a question.
I have a comment, Mr. Chair.
A comment.
I graduated from Appleton High School, so I'm very familiar with the roads and the situation, especially because my dad, Moose Zimmer, was the manager at the cooperative in Appleton when WestCon was created, and he fought very hard to try to get a facility also located in Appleton at the time when it was being put together. So I'm very supportive of this initiative. I hope you're able to get the funding that you need to put this into place. You know, we lost him a few years ago, but it would be great if we could get something like this that he believed in so much that would help the community and everybody that lives there. So hopefully we're able to figure out how to find some funding.
Great. Thank you, Senator Jensen. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, and thanks to Senator Coonan and the testifiers. I'm a co-author on this legislation, and you mentioned the CCA and some of the future employees, if we can ever get that reopened. Can you give us a status? Is there any promise on the horizon right now? I know we've been fighting for that for years, I have, and I was appreciated the kind of facility it offered the state and this region. But any prospects right now that there might be some reopening or bringing prisoners back to that area?
Senator...
To the mayor, maybe, if he has any insight. I'm just curious for an update, because I know that's a great facility that's unfortunately sitting vacant.
With regards to the prison, the last we had heard was that they had not gotten the federal contract that they had competed quite hard to get. So I have not heard anything like that. They continue to tell us at the local level anyways that they are still trying to fill that place up as quickly as possible. I guess that's all we really know. You know, we see them annually continue to do upgrades to the facility, whether it be painting on the outside, roof repair, inside repair. You know, with what they're doing, you would hope that they wouldn't be sticking money into a facility that they don't look to open up someday. But as of this time, we have not known specific details on what they look to do.
Great. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I guess just a parting comment. Many of you may know, but those of you that don't, this is a private prison facility. Our state of Minnesota has used them from time to time to contract some of our prisoners, but it's the only prison facility in our state that I'm aware of that pays property taxes, which you heard the mayor talk about. But an interesting phenomenon, and at its peak, it employed 300 to 400 people out there, and it's certainly been a big hit for that area since the prison has had to shut down. And the good news of lower prison populations is positive in a societal sense, but it is was a big employer that is hopefully we can get reopened.
Great. Thank you. Senator Kidmar?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Coonan, your testifiers, I've driven that stretch. It's a very, very awkward turn, and I think it's very much needed, and I think this kind of a simple way to do this is very good. But generally speaking, you know, since this is a township road, generally this would be something that the township would handle more, but it seems as though your tax base in this particular situation has made it very difficult for you as a township. Also, it connects with a state highway, correct? So can you explain a little
correct.
Bit more? Because it's unusual. We don't usually get a township request.
Mr. Oslin, Councilman.
The reason it's a township request is because it is a township road. And I am a supervisor on the Avalon Township Road, and you know, we're looking at a $1 million project here, and I can tell you, being I'm on the board, we probably have funds currently of $127,000, and that's needed for continual road upgrades in the township, snow removal. We just did a tour of our roads, and we found two culverts that were blown out in one of the roads down on some wildlife land that are going to need to be replaced. So I guess the reason from the township perspective is, you know, because it's actually a township road that we're looking at improving.
Thank you, Senator Mr. Chair. Chipmire. The reason why I brought it up, though, is actually to be helpful, that I know it's a township road, but it's also a heavily trafficked truck area, right?
Correct. Correct. There are. I actually live close to that road, and there are semi trucks that use that township road, that gravel road, to bypass the intersection in Appleton. Some of it's because their loads are too high and they cannot go under the underpass under the railway, and other reasons for they just do not want to go on that intersection with a loaded truck. It's really different with a semi truck because you have to come up and come under a bridge, and then you make a turn, and you are on an angle. You are on a slight upgrade. Then you have to stop and then make your turn either left or right onto Highway 7. And it's also difficult with a loaded truck coming down that way because people driving cars, for example, they see the stop sign, they come right up to the edge of it to make their turn, and if you're going to make a turn with a semi-trailer, you have the back of your trailer to make sure you safely make the turn, and it's a really tight intersection for truck traffic. And I guess the main reason is we feel that with this improvement to the Appleton facility, we're going to see the truck traffic increase pretty substantially there, not only for harvest time, but also through other types of the year when grain movement increases.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Senator Coonan?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill. And I have driven through that intersection hundreds of times with a semi-trailer, and I know from personal experience that thing is really a challenge. As Mr. Oslin mentioned, there's an incline at the stop sign there, which makes it difficult. On top of that, when you're turning up towards Highway 7 there, you have to take the truck over into the opposite lane a ways to keep the trailer from running into the curb. And if you're making a right turn, you got to make the turn wide enough to miss the stop sign also. And so it's a really tight turn with poor visibility if you're on the highway itself. It's confusing to people who are driving automobiles, too. I know I've been going to the northwest on Highway 7 just before the turn there, if you look at the map, and I'm going to make a left towards 119, and there'll be somebody sitting at that stop sign where there's no room to pull the truck in there, and then traffic will be pulling up behind you, and they can't see around you, and sometimes they try and pass the truck, even though there's traffic coming from the north, and it causes a real problem there with cars and trucks all in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so it is a real issue. It's a bad intersection. But Mr. Chairman and committee, I want to thank you for taking the time to hear the bill and appreciate your consideration.
Great. Thank you, Senator Coonan. Anything further, members? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
Chair, members, I'm going to take the chair's prerogative and jump to my bills because I have to scoot upstairs to present a couple of bills up there. So I'm going to present my bills and then get out of here.
Mr. Chair, if I can just ask the staff while you get ready, I happen to be out of the room a bit. What bills do we have left on this long list?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, we still have Senator Sieben's bill, Senate File 192, Senator DeBill's bills, Senate File 445 and 1600, and Senator Dietzick's bill, Senate File 1259.
So we've done 111 and we've done the first one?
Yes, we moved those.
Okay. Senator DeBill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Madam Chair, if we could start with Senate File 445. Madam Chair, members, this is now becoming a perennial request.
of the legislature. Mm-hmm. And that is simply put to repair deep water storm tunnels in the I-35W right-of-way. Madam Chair, members, these storm tunnels for many years now, and so I can't believe they haven't completely failed and collapsed, but they're in very, very tough shape and performing very, very inadequately, even as they are. And I can have Ms. Cerny from the City of Minneapolis explain why we have kind of this shared responsibility with MnDOT for these tunnels. But if you look at the packet, the little handout, and you look at the photographs, you can see the tunnels themselves are the lining is failing. There's a lot of gaps on the exterior. There's a lot of cracks. There's a tremendous amount of sedimentation, debris. Just a lot of work has been done. The good news is that MnDOT actually has come up with some resources to assist with this project, but we still need to find some resources to deal with this, what is really a regional statewide infrastructure need. It handles a tremendous amount of stormwater. It's a function of the freeway having been built and interrupting the normal flow that used to be in place before the freeway was put in place. With that, we'll have our city engineer.
Welcome to the committee.
Give us a better explanation.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Cerny. I'm the Director of Surface Water and Sewers within the Public Works Division within the City of Minneapolis, and I'm honored to be here again next to Senator Dibble. Like he said, hopefully we will be successful soon with funding this. But I'm here to talk about the 35W, and I'm going to focus on the 35W North Deep Storm Tunnel and the preservation of that. This tunnel is a critical piece of infrastructure that provides drainage for both the City of Minneapolis as well as MnDOT right-of-way. I'll walk through the seven slides. You can take a peek at them as I'm going through them. But a quick brief history is these tunnels were constructed during about the same time as the freeway was built. They are made out of unreinforced concrete, meaning that the sandstone that they're built in provides a critical structural support for the tunnels to continue to function and operate. They range in size from 8 to 14 feet in diameter. They are roughly 80 to 100 feet below the surface, so underneath the bedrock. So they were built in about the 60s. The North Tunnel was primarily built to function and support the drainage needed for the 35W on the north side of the river, as well as we had a significant amount of storm water that was draining into sanitary, so that's the combined sewer piece, and to accommodate the separation from any of those projects. Today I'm here to request $2 million in state bonds, and we have $2 million of a local match in our Stormwater Utility Fund, which is an enterprise fund in the City of Minneapolis. We have, as Senator Dibble mentioned, been successful in cooperation with MnDOT in funding the majority of the 35W South Tunnel, and so this funding would go towards the next critical pieces in the 35W North segment. On slide 5 is where there's some photos of the different types of deficiencies that exist and then would also be addressed. You can see on the top left there's groundwater that is infiltrating, meaning it's coming through the lining of the pipe. What happens is it's built in sandstone, so very fine particles get brought into the pipe with the water, creating the voids outside of the pipe. So I'll just jump to the bottom left. That looks like a tunnel. It's not supposed to be a tunnel. That's a void outside of the pipe, where much of the sandstone has been pulled into the pipes and washed into the river, which is also not a good thing from a water quality perspective. Let's fix this forever. The types of solutions or things that we would do with this funding are to remove the sediment that's built up in the pipe, to seal the joints and the fractures and the cracks, stopping the water from pulling additional sandstone in, repairing the holes, adding some reinforcement to that concrete, and then we fill in, or we call it grouting, outside the void to help keep the tunnel structurally sound. So once again, this is a critical piece of infrastructure for the city of Minneapolis as well as MnDOT and the region. This funding would allow us to address the conditions before they become a much more critical safety issue. It would allow Minneapolis to continue to make separation of the stormwater out of our sanitary system and put it into a system that can handle in good condition that additional flow. And we have had contact and discussions with MnDOT, and they are aware of this request and supportive of this funding request. With that, I'd like to thank you for your time this afternoon and stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cerny. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was reading through the material, and I just couldn't tell for sure. There's a kind of a mixture of stormwater draining to the sanitary system and then also to the Mississippi River. It's neat to see that the south is done. Trust that's or getting done.
It's getting done.
Getting
yes.
done. And the north, no question about its need. But just a matter of information, where does the water go once this is done? How are you handling that water?
Yes, sir.
I just couldn't tell from here.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Senator Dibble.
So it's all stormwater. Part of the goal of this is, of course, to keep stormwater out of the sanitary, and it goes to the Mississippi River.
Right? Correct.
You see the outfall in that very, very first title slide, so that it comes out close to the new 35W bridge.
On the north side of the river, yes.
Yep.
Senator, thank you, Madam Chair. I kind of saw that, but I wasn't sure if it was making a change. Is the stormwater from all these sources then, because a lot of this is road salt, oil, debris, variety of things that are going on, does this get filtered in any way before it goes into the Mississippi River? Maybe that's part of this. I just haven't seen it.
Ms. Cerny?
This program that we're requesting funding for does not do that. That's a very difficult thing to do if you imagine a 14-foot diameter tunnel full of water coming gushing. So much of the treatment that we try to do is before that into this, with the smaller drainage areas before it gets into the tunnel.
So,
Senator
Dibb. So, Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, that's an excellent question. And part of what Minneapolis has done to handle just rainwater, stormwater, is undertaking a variety of initiatives so that drainage is handled on commercial sites and held as long as possible. Additionally, on residential sites, a lot of encouragement and some incentives through our sewer bill to hold, do the rain gardens, do the permeable surfaces, do those sorts of things, so that just through the routine precipitation that we get, water goes as slowly as possible, filters through and gets into the storm drain system, by percolating through the earth and, getting treated through buffers and things like that before it gets into lakes and then gets into the storm sewer. On the large rainfall events, though, it all just rushes in. There's no way to handle that in terms of treating it before it gets into our surface water.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dibble, that's very helpful, and I certainly do understand that. In Sherburne County, the Bowser, on an annual or biannual basis, we go on a tour for a day seeing various things. And recently, one of those sites was a difficult situation with a lot of water, some sediment, and they tried different ways, but they eventually created kind of a slowdown and then a trap that they could then clean out, even for high-volume times. That has been incredibly effective beyond their expectations.
Yeah.
Senator Dibble.
Yeah, we do Senator Kiffmeyer, Madam Chair, we do have some of those chambers that mm-hmm. capture large volumes of water, let things settle out before they move on. Ms. Cerny can describe those a little better.
Ms. Cerny.
We have about 140 of those in various different locations throughout the city of Minneapolis, as well as a number of different types of sedimentation or infiltration trenches. And the reason why we have those distributed versus a large single one is simply the volume.
Gotcha, yeah. Well, great. That was very good. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Additional questions, members? Senator Senjum.
Just a comment. I, on a personal basis, really highly supportive. This is
This is pretty critical infrastructure. If this goes bad, I would believe $2 million to fix it turns into an awful lot more than that to make that repair should one of these tunnels collapse or something like that. It would be a near financial disaster and certainly not good for the city of Minneapolis in terms of getting rid of stormwater. These are critical pieces. We need to take care of them.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. And a little secret, well, not so secret to folks living in Minneapolis, but a number of years ago, was it 1997? We had a whole series of storms, like six, and it really highlighted the deficiencies in our overall stormwater system. We had many localized floods throughout Minneapolis, destroyed whole neighborhoods. Neighborhoods that, of course, were in the low-lying areas that never should have been built there anyways. As a consequence, what we did was remove those, several blocks of houses in a number of locations and restored stormwater detention ponds. We just don't want to repeat that experience. This handles a lot of water that would otherwise have nowhere to go and, of course, would flood houses and neighborhoods and things like that. It would be pretty bad. So thank you.
All right. Seeing no additional comments or questions.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Now we'll move on to a Hennepin County request, Senate File 1600. Again, this has been before the committee a number of times. Hopefully we'll get it on this year. But a lot of progress to report, and this is actually ready to go. A lot of planning. This is for a transit facility at 35 W and Lake Street, a place where folks can catch the bus. If you look at the handout, Madam Chair, if you turn on the flip side, that's what's there today, and it's pretty horrible, very very few people use that spot unless they have to catch the bus there. If members recall, we had the Urban Partnership Agreement a number of years ago in which we created the beginnings of a bus rapid transit facility all the way from Lakeville up into downtown Minneapolis. We have express buses, hope for someday bus rapid transit in that corridor. But even the express bus service that we have that runs on the interior shoulder, it all breaks down at this point because then the buses have to get back into the general purpose traffic, get over to the exterior shoulder to pick folks up, and then get back into the traffic flow, and all the efficiency and time gains are pretty much ameliorated by having to do that. So the goal is there are a number of goals, but the biggest goal is to really be able to serve as many riders through that corridor from the suburbs up to the downtown area, and vice versa, make that a much more attractive a form of transportation. As it is today, transit in that corridor carries the equivalent of 2.5 lanes of single occupancy vehicle traffic. If we made it more attractive, it would take even that much more pressure off of the general purpose lanes and the congestion circumstances in that corridor. It also connects, of course, to the east-west spine for the Greenway corridor, which someday we'll probably have some sort of fixed guideway rail that'll connect the Green Line and the Blue Line in that midtown point, as well as all the Lake Street service that occurs east and west at that point. With that, I will suspend. Who would like to go first? Commissioner McLaughlin will go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm Peter McLaughlin. I'm co-chair of the Hennepin County Intergovernmental Relations Committee and a county commissioner. I want to thank the chair for his longstanding support for this legislation. I would remind the committee members that section of 35W that we're talking about is the busiest road in the state of Minnesota, the busiest. And it's a part of this particular improvement is part of a long saga of design that goes back to the Bush administration, the Pawlenty administration, where we got the UPA grant that Senator Dibble mentioned. But this is the one of the pieces that was left out. At 46th Street, there's a transit station in the middle of the road. When you go 16 blocks to Lake Street, you have to pull all the way to the far right-hand side, crossing four lanes of traffic. And that's the that delays the buses. It compromises the service, and it's a real safety problem, particularly at rush hour. With this improvement, there would be, once the bus rapid transit is actually up and operating, there would be 100 buses per hour going through this station at rush hour. Every 40 seconds, there'd be a bus coming into this station. So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a major transit improvement here. I would note, as chair of the county's Transit Improvement Board, that this is a part of our program of projects. This is a corridor we committed to when we were created, and we're prepared to provide 30% of the funding, which is the usual level of funding that the county's Transit Improvement Board provides. And for those of you who, there are some people who like to think that CTIB only does light rail, it's a bus project, and we're proud to be supportive of this. Senator Dibble, the pictures do tell the story. I will tell you, it's either 110 degrees up there when you're standing up there, or it's about 20 below wind chill. And there's not much in between. And walking up those naked steps is an ordeal, number one. And number two, if the wind's blowing, it can be really wicked. So this would be a major improvement on a major corridor. And we hope that the state can provide us this bonding assistance to provide the connectivity and to get this major corridor up to the point where it can have a very high-quality transit component to it. I would turn it over to Mr. Jim Grube, who's the county engineer.
Welcome, Madam Chair and members, my name is Jim Grube. I'm the Hennepin County engineer. I'd like to thank Senator Dibble for his continued support of the project, and of course, Commissioner McLaughlin also his leadership at the county level in providing support for the project. Just a couple of notes for the members. This is a partnership that includes the City of Minneapolis, Metro Council by way of Metro Transit, the Minnesota Department of Transportation in Hennepin County. All of us are together with this project in mind, and we see it as of great benefit for not only the City of Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, where the location, the physical location is, but also the connection to south of the river, Lakeville, all the way up into Minneapolis, providing a connection, a vital connection for people going into Minneapolis, leaving Minneapolis for jobs on a reverse commute, or going into the city for various purposes. It's a strong partnership, and we seek your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Grube. Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, I'd also mention that there are some, even at this point close by, there are some major employment centers. There's the Wells Fargo campus, and a little bit further to the east, Alina, and the hospitals on Chicago Avenue. And so both the transit and roadway improvements that this project would entail would improve access to those major employment centers.
Great. Questions or comments, members? Senator Sinjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe just a comment. I've been out there maybe two or three times. There's no question in my mind about, you know, the need. But then I'll be kind of honest. When I look at some of these pictures, I'm looking at, you know, Academy Award. I mean, it is a bus stop. I'm looking at Academy Award architecture. It's not the Metropolitan Opera or anything like that, but these pictures would seem to suggest it is built with that stylistic kind of approach. Is there any way to, is this what you get for $9.6 million plus a local share, or are there some reasons why we're putting together, you know, a transit stop that looks like the most glorious building in the world?
Well, Mr. Senator, Chair, Madam Chair, I'll just say, architects always know, they always make things look really snazzy, and then even if they were to build this, I bet you it wouldn't look half as nice, because there's always like, it's always dark and it's always lit up like the opening night of a movie. That being said, I think it should be nice because, you know, this is going to be a major piece of our landscape and an element of our city. The other thing I'll say is it does need to be open, well lit, what we call defensible space. Mm-hmm. That's a major safety issue. We've heard about the issues of the central station. Whenever you have vertical movement, you got some fundamental public safety issues. So part of what might make it look so nice is because it's so open and well lit and transparent. part of that is to make it attractive. Part of that is to dissuade bad actors and bad behavior. Create, you know, eyes on all the space that's available as is possible. You know, we've had trouble at the Hiawatha, you know, where we have vertical movement there, the Hiawatha line where you connect at Lake Street. And part of that is, you know, some of those corners are hard to defend and hard to see. You know, but less so down at 46, which is another open, kind of airy, bright facility. Mr. Grube has probably some.
Madam Chair and members, that was an excellent question in terms of a change in the future. When Commissioner McLaughlin was talking about 100 buses going through the station in the peak direction in the peak hour, such great loading as people are going vertically from Lake Street, which is always in the top three in the metropolitan area as a surface street transit system, connecting the Lake Street east-west spine with the north-south 35W spine and having 100 buses go through there in an hour it's going to be vastly different than having a shelter on the side of the road that has a periodic pickup that occurs today. This will be a hub of people moving north, south, east, and west, and actually up and down to connect between Lake and the freeway.
And Madam Chair, I have no problem with, you know, the project and all its functionality. It's needed. It's scary to stand up there on the top of that little bus stop and watch those cars go by, I don't know, 70 miles an hour. It's just, you know, this is a fairly opulent design. And I don't know, I think we just have to think about those things.
Thank you, Senator. Commissioner? Did you want to
Madam Chair, I would just reinforce Senator Dibble's comments about needing to have a lot of glass and a lot of light. This is the single biggest threat to use of this station would be a perception that it's not safe. And the best way to do that, to make it be perceived and to be safer, is to have it be open, well-lit, and the like. And so that's the attempt here with this design.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I know that sometimes they do these conceptual drawings and they do all that. But I think on the safety-wise and the lighting, being when I was doing my nursing programs, St. John's and St. Joe's and North Memorial and wherever, there was nothing worse than being in a bus stop, Senator Senjum, than the dark, drabby, you know, kind of thing. And so there's multiple things. But I do think, though, the biggest thing is that we took the tour in St. Cloud, and they had a kind of a hub transit area. But it was very much in keeping with the city of St. Cloud. I mean, it was nice, but also fit in their area very well. My one thought, and I know this is just conceptual, well-lit is one thing, but some of the steel and some of those things, I think it just should be in keeping with your location while you have all of those strong elements that are certainly very, very important. And I would suspect that is your intention. It's just that they happened to throw this drawing in that caught attention. Not always deserved. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Maybe we'll make it in the Frank Lloyd Wright Prairie style.
All right. Well, seeing no additional questions or comments, thank you all for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Hopefully the however many time is the charm.
All right. Madam Chair, I'll just leave the gavel in your hand, and I'm going to go upstairs and see about my other hearings.
Great. Thanks. All right. Senator Sieben with Senate File 192. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for your time today. Senate File 192 is a bonding request for the Red Rock Corridor Transitway, which is a transit line that begins in northern Dakota County and goes up through Washington County and hopefully eventually into downtown Minneapolis. And with me today to talk about the Red Rock Corridor is Commissioner Carla Bigham, who represents South Washington County, and Susan Rader, who's from Anderson Window Corporation. So first, I think Commissioner Bigham would like to speak.
Welcome, Commissioner Bigham.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. First, appreciate you taking up Senate File 192 and want to thank Senator Sieben and all the co-authors for their support of the bill. My name is Carla Bigham. I'm Washington County Commissioner and Chair of the Red Rock Corridor Commission. As the Senator said, the Red Rock Corridor is a 30-mile transit way that starts in Hastings and ends at the Union Depot with hopeful continuing on to Minneapolis. We are hoping that with the support of Senate File 192 that we will be able to grow the regional transit system and build on the Red Rock Corridor. Our vision for the corridor is a consistent all-day bus rapid transit, bi-directional, while preserving the existing express bus route. We're working towards short and long-term implementation strategies to ensure that we invest in a system that meets our needs for changing communities. Some of the short-term strategies were the opening of the Newport Transit Center this past December, and that's a key station location in Newport to continue building the ridership along the corridor. We also, the station is going to be a catalyst for development in a joint project between the Washington County HRA, the City of Newport, and Met Council that we are able to, hopefully, Met Council is expected to bring in a development there, private sector development of housing and retail. There are multiple benefits for expanding the transit region. One, obviously, is to increase access to jobs. I had earlier this year met with Renewal by Anderson, and Ms. Rader is here to talk a little bit more about that. And they'll be expanding and investing in Cottage Grove and bringing jobs that obviously having access to that talented work pool is key. And Renewal by Anderson is not the only business in the Cottage Grove industrial area that will be having major expansion. It was recently announced that Werner Electric and American Logistics are going to be having major expansions this year. And also we know that Leafline will be opening up, which is the medicinal marijuana plant, will be opening up in Cottage Grove very soon. This also will help manage congestion and our growth. We're expected to add more than 100,000 new residents in the next 20 years in Washington County in the East Metro. And obviously to move people and products efficiently and safely is key. And also, it brings transportation investment equity, including new development opportunities to the East Metro. And the development in the Red Rock Crossing, which is the hopeful development around the Newport Park and Ride, and also many other economic developments that will hopefully come across on the transit line there. And we're very excited about it. Right now, the Red Rock Corridor Commission is currently undergoing the implementation plan to outline a clear path of the expansion and how to fund and construct the transitway. So we hope we can count on your support for Senate File 192 and to advance the environmental analysis and engineering needed to also seek the federal funds for the Red Rock Corridor. So with that, can take any questions. Or
thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Rader, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Senator Sieben, it's a delight to be here today and represent Anderson Windows, which is a 100-plus-year-old company located in Washington County, for whom we announced last week that we are going to expand our Cottage Grove facility, and the company will invest $38 million to expand that by 125,000 square feet, which is very exciting for us. Glad to see the building industry coming back after a great recession. With the expansion comes 200 new jobs at the Cottage Grove plant, and these are going to be good jobs, engineers, advanced manufacturing, clerical jobs. When Anderson got its start over 100 years ago, there was a great train that used to bring our employees out from Minneapolis and St. Paul, architects and developers and R&D people. And it's kind of interesting to think of the Red Rock Corridor as that next great mode of transportation to help folks work at our plant to help us, quite frankly, move product. We have one of the largest private fleets in the country. We move a lot of windows and patio doors, millions of them every year. And that corridor is very important to us. As a sidebar, our company is very committed to affordable housing. We built, with the partnership of Twin Cities Habitat, 18 Habitat homes in Newport. And we're about to start homes 10, 11, 12 in Cottage Grove for Twin Cities Habitat. And those are the families that also need transportation. They want to work in the city. They want to have careers of their own. And a transportation line like this would be a wonderful addition to this community. So we appreciate your support and your time today.
Thank you. And I know that in Bayport, you've also had a lot of jobs, and transportation has been a real issue in bringing people to those good jobs. So I'm glad to see this next step of commitment. So thank you. And a special shout out to Commissioner Bigham. Who is this your first time to testify in the Senate in your new job?
I think I did in a conference committee once, but yes, mainly my work was in the House.
Yes, so. as a former member of the House, we welcome you over here.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Kiffmeyer, question.
Just a comment. On your project, Senator Sieben, I look at this as a 30-mile transitway, and the request is for $1 million to engineer, environment, acquire, design, construct, and infrastructure. I think that's a good deal for $1 million for what this means, and 30 miles. You have to remember, this is a committee that has heard 187, 212, so in that context, it's good for you because $1 million is sounding pretty good. But I do think that the bus transit, especially done in a little bit nicer way, so it has a little bit more respect amongst the riders, is a good value.
Madam Senator Chair Sieben. And Senator Kiffmeyer, just to be clear, this appropriation would be for the another phase of the project. It would not be the complete build-out of the Red Rock Corridor. I'd like to squeeze that all into $1 million, but
dashed,
don't think that that's possible. But I'd also just like to point out that the alternative analysis that was done in 2013 did identify bus rapid transit as the preferred route in this corridor. There originally, and members may remember, this does run along the existing railroad tracks, and there is still discussion about a long-term future phase-in of a corridor similar to North Star. But at this time, we're seeking funding and moving forward with requests for federal funding for bus rapid transit.
Commissioner Bigham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to elaborate a little bit more on the Senator's comments, as you know, Gateway Corridor, the Gold Line, is bus rapid transit as well. And one of the possibilities through our implementation plan here for Red Rock is to see if there's any possible overlap so that we could save money and speed up a timeline. And obviously, to do the implementation plan, which we're currently underway, it'll be a little bit before we know that, but that's another exciting option for us with Red Rock and the Gold Line.
And if I can just comment, something that people may not be familiar with, this stretch of 61 is right in there between the cliff and the railroad lines and the river. And so there's no additional space for significant expansion. So this is an important option for a lot of traffic coming up that way.
Madam Chair, just to follow up. Yeah. How many miles is this doing then? If it's not 30, then how many miles is it doing?
Madam Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, this is to do more of the engineering and environmental analysis. So it's not for actually, because as you know, bus rapid transit is a dedicated lane or uses existing lanes on the highway. This isn't for the construction of the actual roadway. This is for the design and environmental analysis to acquire property or rights of way as needed. I think when it talks about construction of facilities, I assume that may be for things like at the in St. Paul, what's the name of the stop?
Lower Afton.
Lower Afton, for example, right now there is just a shoulder. There's no bus stop or station. So I would assume that if the commission chose to implement some of the bonding dollars that way, it could be for a build out of that bus stop, for example, that could later be used for the bus rapid transit.
Okay, Madam Chair, the language of the bill construed something a little different. So I certainly understand bus stop, that would be a facility or some sort of thing like that. So I'm not questioning that. I just want to know a little more about how much. But that answers my question. Thank you very much. Well done.
Senator Sieben, any additional comments?
No, I just call members' attention. I didn't mention this, that there should be a flyer in your packet if you wanted to visualize where the route is as well. But thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, and
Last but not least, Senator Dietzick with Senate File 1259. Senator Dietzick, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing this bill. Senate File 1259 is a bonding request to rehab the 10th Avenue Bridge in southeast Minneapolis over the Mississippi River. The average daily traffic on the bridge is about 10,000 cars. The bridge also carries a lot of pedestrian and bike traffic, about 200 bikes a day, since it goes from the western edge of the University of Minnesota Minneapolis campus in southeast Minneapolis over the Mississippi Rivers to the West Bank Seven Corners area. With me today is Councilmember Kevin Wright, Mr. Steve Kotke, who is Minneapolis Public Works Director, and Mr. Don Elwood, who is Minneapolis Transportation Planning and Engineer Director. And I know your time is limited, and so I'm just going to turn the presentation over to them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. As the Senator indicated, this is a very significant piece of infrastructure, not only to the local residents, but the role it plays as a transportation hub.
And can you quickly please identify yourself?
Yeah, sure. As a transportation hub, and my name for the record, as introduced, was Councilmember Kevin Reich, Chair of the Transportation Public Works Committee of the City of Minneapolis. A very significant piece of infrastructure, not only for the local residents, but the role it plays as a hub for the regional system, transportation system. Of course, it supports a lot of the employer base. As we all well know, the downtown Minneapolis, multiple employment opportunities there that it connects folks to. But as indicated, this is a significant piece, a linchpin piece for how we serve the University of Minnesota as an institution. It connects both campuses, not just to get the students to and from, but also the service that are required to maintain that campus in the form of public safety, getting fire there, police there. It's a very critical piece of infrastructure in that sense. As such, it's a significant piece of infrastructure. It spans 2,000 feet across the Mississippi River, and that's no small task to maintain for a municipality. As a local unit of government, we do look to our partners at the higher end of the food chain politically to work in these projects as partners. And I believe staff will be able to elaborate the scope of what we're looking at, the seriousness in which we're taking it, and the alternatives that we explored to best meet the needs of this bridge and do it in a financially reasonable manner.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Steve Kotke. I'm the Director of Public Works and also the City Engineer for the City of Minneapolis. I'm just going to talk real briefly on this and then turn it over to Don to walk through the presentation that you have in front of you. The 10th Avenue Bridge was built in 1929. It's a large, historic, reinforced concrete arch bridge crossing the Mississippi River. It is, if you're not familiar with it, it is actually just downstream a bit from the 35W Bridge that crosses the Mississippi River. This bridge is really a key and vital transportation connection between two really regionally important areas. So what I'd say refer to as on the south or west side of the bridge, this is where we have the University of Minnesota West Bank campus. We have the Cedar Riverside neighborhood and community, and we also have downtown Minneapolis. On the other end of the bridge, on the north and east side of the bridge, we have Marcy Holmes neighborhood, we have Dinkytown, and we also have the University of Minnesota East Bank campus, as well as the connections to St. Paul. As the Senator indicated earlier, the bridge carries about 10,000 vehicles a day, but it's also a very, very important connection for both pedestrian and bicycles. We did conduct a 20-year economic analysis evaluating three options. Those three options were removing the bridge, replacing the bridge, or building a new bridge, and repairing and rehabbing the bridge. The results of that study indicated that the most economically viable option is actually to repair the bridge at a cost of $42 million. So with that, I will turn it over to Don Elwood.
Mr. Elwood, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Don Elwood, Director of Transportation Planning and Engineering for the City of Minneapolis. I see some of you have a copy of the handout. I want to briefly walk through some of those slides. I think many of these items have been talked about. On slide three, we have a nice picture of the original construction back in 1928, and it is a significant crossing of the river, and became even more so with the conversion of the Washington Avenue Bridge when the Central Corridor came along. On slide four, after 40 years of service in 1970, the bridge was closed and reopened in 1978 after an extensive rehabilitation project was overtaken. And over the past 36 years, this bridge, it's served the public well, but it's beginning to deteriorate again. And the primary cause is leaking through the expansion joints, getting into the floor beams, the spandrel columns, the arch ribs, and the piers. And so on slide five, I just want to briefly walk through what these technical terms are. So you have the bridge deck in green, and that's where most people see. That's what you drive on, walk on, bike on. And underneath that, perpendicular to the bridge, we have these floor beams that go along. Those are in tan. Underneath are those floor beams are then connected to these vertical spandrel columns in yellow, and that transmits the forces from the deck into that arch rib that you see in blue. And then those arch ribs connect into the piers in red. So these all work together to transmit the load from the bridge deck down into the pier and then ultimately into the ground. Back in the 1970s, on slide 7, I have some pictures of what had occurred back then. And we had some significant deterioration in the 70s. Those were in the on slide 8, some pictures of where these beams connect to the deck and ultimately into the spandrels. And then again on slide 9, when the spandrel connects into the arch rib. And so you can flip back between those colored pictures and say, aha, I know right where that is on the photos. In 2013, we had a bridge design firm was retained to develop a project plan, and field surveys found back then that the deterioration of the bridge was accelerated substantially greater than we had anticipated. And on slide 11, there's that's not me out there in that facility, but that's how we get out there to take a look at these items up close. On slide 12, I have some findings. What did we find out? The deck and the floor beam system, the top of the deck where most people see had some cracking, and the bottom of the deck, where it connects at the joint to the beam, that's where we're getting most of the deterioration. And then the floor beams themselves similarly are experiencing, they have variable conditions because if they're at the joint, we're seeing more deterioration. You can see that on slide 13. We have a picture of a beam that's not at a joint, and then again, right below it, a picture of a beam at a joint, and you can see what's happening at the joints with those floor beams. On to slide 14, on the spandrel columns, again, that's the vertical piece that goes up to the beam. And on the arch ribs, that's the blue that brings all the forces into the piers. The lower portions of the spandrel columns and the arch ribs were from 1929, and those components are showing more deterioration, as well as the arch ribs, because those are critical to transmit that load into the piers. Those are also showing deteriorations. And slide 15 has some pictures of that, of what types of things are going on at these connection points, and those connections are very important. So in conclusion, we found that a full rehabilitation project would consist of replacing the deck and the parapets at the arch spans, replacing and patching the floor beams, the spanner columns. Some of the spanner columns would be replaced, as well as the ribs and the connections at the piers. We have a total project cost estimate for rehabilitation around $42 million. And that concludes my PowerPoint.
Thank you. Senator Desick, any additional comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Mr. Kaki said, we believe this is the most effective way to replace the bridge. It is a bridge that is critical, as the council member said, to the area. And if it were to have to be closed for safety reasons because we didn't have the money to do it, you have 35 there. There's just not a lot of other alternatives in that area. because you run into the campus and you just run into some dense areas, and then you've got this river in between. So it is very much a critical connection. So thank you for listening, and ask for your support, and available for any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've looked through the packet several times, and so, you know, I don't question your project at all. My question is only informational, and that was that the primary cause of deterioration is leaking joints in the deck. And I know how water is. If it leaks on top, it goes all the way down and does damage all the way through. And with Minnesota's freezing and contracting, that does a lot of damage. So just curious, if you're looking at a new bridge, sounds like this design had leaking joints, and maybe that's just the nature of them. But do you think of design features that would maybe enable you to give a little more lifespan to this particular bridge?
Madam Chair, Senator, we are going to rehab this bridge. We won't be reconstructing the bridge. But a portion of the bridge that we will be totally replacing is the deck, the top layer. And we are going to be looking very closely, and this is one of the reasons where we've decided as part of the rehab to replace the top deck, is this very issue of what we call expansion joints. And that they do need to be rebuilt, they need to be put in a higher tech fashion, and so as we rebuild the top deck, we will be improving those seals. So that will be part of the solution.
Good, thank you. Sounds great plan. Thank you,
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just kind of curious when I looked at the history of the bridge. You know, about, as you said, 40 years from construction to the first rehab, almost 40 years lifespan of the second rehab, or the first rehab, only 20 years for the second rehab expected service life, and then we go back to 40 when you plan to do rehab 3. Why do we expect rehab 2 to last only half as long?
Mr. Elwood, Mr. Cockey.
Right. Madam Chair, Senator, we've been evaluating this bridge for quite a long time, and the amount of rehab we were going to the bridge has been modified. So our current estimate of life expectancy with a $42 million rehab is actually 42 years.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pratt, originally in probably 2013. I mean, I've had this bill before, and as I said, we brought it forward. We were the state did give them some money, and then when they continued on and were doing additional investigation, they found out that it had deteriorated more, and so it was worse. And so, is what this could be is unfortunately a kind of a mishmash of the data from when I, you know, came back before when we had a $10 million rehab and we thought we could fix it and literally just seal some of those joints at $10 million. And then again, when they came back and determined it had deteriorated way more than they expected, and they went to the larger one to make it last the 42 years. So my guess is this graph is an error from the earlier.
Okay.
So, but thanks. We will check on that and confirm. 60s.
Thank you. Additional comments, members? Senator Dietzick, any concluding comments? Or Senator Sengel?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if I'm tracking along with Senator Kiffmeyer's thoughts or not, but for instance, I look at this picture. It's about the fourth, fifth one in upstream side of span 3, but you go through the packet in there. This bridge, to the layperson, does not look very good. and I'm not even sure what my question, you know, for instance, upstream side of span 3, I see, you know, certainly the bridge deck and the supports there are seemingly terrible shape. I mean, are we going to be replacing those? I guess they're really the bottom line question. Are we putting good money on top of junk here, or is this really worth it? I imagine this is about a fifth the cost of a new bridge, but this thing, is it structurally sound? Has it been, if you will, I don't know how they do it, ultrasound or whatever. Is the concrete good on this thing?
Mr. Cockey.
Madam Chair, Senator, The photo you're actually looking at was a photo taken back in the 70s when the bridge was being rehabbed at that point.
Oh, my. Okay.
Right. But
so it's even better.
But the question is actually a good one, and it's one that I get quite regularly. If you travel down West River Road, for example, you can see the underside of the bridge, and you can see not conditions like you see on this page, but you can see, you know, a lot of spalling. You can see exposed rebar. And we do get the question, is this bridge safe? The answer to that is yes, this bridge is structurally sound, structurally safe. We have traffic on the bridge today. However, it is deteriorating, and it is starting to deteriorate at a faster rate than we thought just a couple years ago. So the bridge is very much a candidate for rehabilitation, and so that's how we'll proceed. But a lot of the what you see today is you know, just it's the bridge is still safe, but it is an indication that it is deteriorating at a
so it's pace. Cosmetically awful, but it's structurally safe, and the rusty rebar and all that is still safe and secure.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kotke.
Yeah, the you know, I think the question in front of us as we look at it is that if we wait too long, if we allow it to get to a point. Now we already have some limited loads on the bridge today, but if we were to let this bridge continue to deteriorate to a point where we actually have to close the bridge, it may very well get to a point where rehabbing the bridge is not an option, that we're going to have to move towards total replacement.
So. Okay. Well, you're the engineers. We'll trust you. If it was a car, if it was my car, you know, and I drive old cars, but I don't know if I'd drive one this old.
Take your bicycle, Senator Sanjim. Take your bike.
Well, and after our conversation about the Kellogg Street Bridge, which is, what, only 30-some years old, that makes you appreciate the design of this one. All right. No other questions or comments on this one? Thank you, Senator Dietzick and testifiers, for bringing this before us.
Thank you, members. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. And we are back on Wednesday, same time, same place, for more bills and needs around our state. So with that, meeting is adjourned.
Senator.